And welcome, welcome, welcome. Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon, dear listeners. Wherever you find yourself, but this Tuesday is a bit confusing. I hope it's not as confusing in terms of weather-wise, as well as also the mood that it sets you in. But, you know, in terms of, you know, being a weatherman and looking up at the skies, sometimes you just don't know anymore. A fun little particular story. Or story time before we actually begin with today's discussion. When I recently went to Zambia, I engaged with one of the obvious locals for that conference validation situation that I was invited to. And talking to the one chappie, I asked him, his name is O'Neill. I asked him, listen, O'Neill, because they basically asked, or the guy basically said, you know, while we were having a conversation, you know, Namibia is probably pretty hot right now. That's now last week. And I looked at him, I said, actually, no. Namibia, currently right now, Namibia's temperature right now, and what it feels like right now is how Zambia feels right now. And mind you, I was in Lusaka, and technically I would have thought and I would have expected the humidity levels to be a lot higher than what they were last week and so on. And standing there, you know, having this conversation, I actually stood there thinking, it's pretty funny that Lusaka's particular temperature, the climate at the time back in last week, out of the 3.5 days, 2.5, out of the 2.5 days that I was there, primarily that it was the same as when I departed from Windhoek here on a Wednesday last week. And the important thing from this particular discussion was the next comment that O'Neill made to me. And he said, usually by mid-August or end of August, we would have had, Zambia would have had the super heat, you know, less humidity, surge in temperatures, humidity and all that. And then the rainfall starts. And these particular indications obviously definitely point to two different countries with two different particular climatic conditions, even though they are connected to each other in one way or another. For example, also like what I discovered, there was this unique thing, this one unique request that was that, you know, we had here internally about the projected harvest that Zambia would be is expected to harvest later this month or in the coming months. And as you fly in to Lusaka, you see all the standing water. And when I say standing water, I'm not talking about dams. I saw rivers. I saw lake. There's a massive lake that I saw from the sky. There's a whole bunch of bodies of water. And that technically took me back to the particular discussion of back in last year when I discovered that Zambia is similar to Albania, where Donald Trump's daughter wants to build that hotel. That Albania basically, that Zambia is similar to Albania, that it's a country that technically has already has implemented a green energy production agenda. They've got a lot of hydroelectric power units on standing, on bodies of standing water. And you could see it. And you could see the massive irrigated, you know, massive tracts of irrigated land and, with crops, you know, from how high you are in the sky, specifically from the plane. You could see all that down there on the surface of the earth. And it was impressive. Now, this discussion, probably this little story time that I'm laying as a foundation into what we're actually looking at for today. And David, as mentioned, David, like yesterday, he will join a little bit later in the show. But today's particular session here on the Home Run has a little bit of a reflection situation taking place, because yes, it is based upon the SDG report of 2026 that came out in July last month. But there's also a report that technically fuels this report. It's Antonio Guterres' report that he had to give to, let me just get this entity's name. He had to give it to another, He had to submit it to the Economic Council. Just want to get his full name. So he had to submit this report, and it was a report that he submitted on 8 June, 2 months back, and he had to submit it to the Economic and Social Council. That council itself is not as powerful as the Security Council, obviously, because the Security Council is like the, you know, the penultimate level of authority in the UN, that permanent, five permanent member structure with invitational members every year. And which are technically the temporary members, and the rotation of sort of like the Security Council presidency as well, which is also, which involves a little bit of the temporary and the permanent member scenarios. And then it cascades a little bit downwards in terms of, how the General Assembly then participates in discussion. In terms of decision making and knowing about the reports and the various information that is gathered and so on and so forth. So, what do we see about this actual scenario? And how does it tie into, you know, the reflective, not that I'm talking about reflective shirts in any manner. No, we're not going to be a safety sign or any particular sort of like occupational health and safety official of any note. No, we're talking about looking back, you know, reflecting on a certain subject matter. As we look at this particular development, the SDGs definitely encompass everything pertaining to your life. The individual, you, listening right now, you, the Eagle FM listener, pertaining to your life, the SDGs technically has that 360 degree, sort of like analytical aspect. But yes, it's a little bit too, I don't want to say superficial, nor do I want to say shallow, because it is a little bit divorced from you. Because in many scenarios, and I'm now also reflecting on David's particular words yesterday where he cited, simplify things for the ordinary person, for the everyday person. Because in some cases, we don't use certain vocabularies. We don't deploy certain words. We don't make use or manifest certain particular schools of thought or expressions or indications. No. And it's one of the things, actually, this is a very good point, because it's actually one of the few things that I learned back in my marketing, under the consumer buyer behavior, subject that I had. And remember, consumer buyer behavior technically is a school of thought, is actually a subject area of psychology that the psychologists had developed before Philip Kotler and the advertising executives back in the US and then ultimately across the world from, I'm talking about here from the 60s and 70s into this side, into the, you know, the, what we now know as the modern era in terms of commercial activity. The psychologists had developed consumer buyer behavior before marketing was developed. A social science, a humanities dimension, developed something before a commercial expression school of thought could take hold. Before that. And the thing that I actually wanted to extract from consumer buyer behavior was that in relation to the statement that David shared, has been sharing here for the past 2 days with us about simplification, simplify things for the ordinary person, break it down, make it digestible, is one of the things that highlighted, for example, like behavior of consumers, behavior of people was, I always remember this particular thing, these couple of, indicators. For example, us men, yes, we are very susceptible to a specific color. It's probably also why a whole bunch of you support three obvious British, English Premier League football teams. If you guys don't know this, they've got the largest fan bases in Namibia. You know who I'm talking about. These are the Liverpools, these are the Arsenals, and these are the Manchester United. You guys can come and beat me up later. I don't care. I'm a Newcastle United. I know we've been down in the doldrums, so we don't have to care about measuring anything in relation to anything or bragging about things that potentially will not happen. We work on reality. Don't worry. But the discussion that emanates from this is, why do so many men get attracted to the color red? Why are so many men, specifically in that one example case study that I just explained to you, that there are literally English Premier League fan clubs of these three football clubs, Arsenal, Liverpool, and Manchester United. Why are there so many men that follow these three clubs in Namibia? You don't hear that there's an AC Milan fan club. No, that's also red, red, black, and white. No, you don't hear it. You don't hear of a, who's the other club that also has red? You don't hear of a Bayern Munich football club, and that's red and blue, or sometimes red, white, and blue, depending on what color scheme the home jersey of Bayern Munich is for a current season. You don't hear about it. You don't hear about a fan club for Bayern Munich. But yet, here in Namibia, a whole 100,000 kilometers divorced away from the United Kingdom, you find three football you find three fan clubs for these three football clubs. You can have your debates, but I'm showing you the obvious particular thing that unites all men, that we are attracted to the color red, like, what's Helmut's favorite phrase? Instant porridge. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Helmut, if you heard that, I'm sorry. So yeah. And another particular indicator was also that the average person is, they will, their attention will always be attracted to bright colors. So this could be the yellows, the oranges, the lime greens, bright yellow, you know, those various particular colors, or even like reflective items. For example, like the reflective shirt that I made reference to, and all these things exist. Now it speaks towards the human psyche, obviously. And obviously, this particular human psyche has been tailored by the marketers to position the best services and the likes in close proximity to us that we can consume every day. So, a complete digression away from what we were supposed to actually start off on. That being the discussion that we're looking at, the reports that come through specifically from the United Nations about the SDG progress. It's actually like a progress report. But here's the big thing that you've got to keep in mind of. There's only 4 years to go until 2030. 4 years. Or is it four? Or is it five? Give or take. Four or five. I'll put it at four. It's 27, 28, 29, 30. Yeah, I'll put it at four. The obvious question to you out there is, do you think Namibia will make it? I'm not asking you to answer it now. I know my answer is a clear and obvious no. It's a clear and obvious no. Don't worry, you can ask me that later on. Or you can ask me during the course of the show for today. I'll simplify it for you, you know, using mathematical expressions. I'll simplify it for you. But here's where the divorce takes place that I referenced a little bit earlier. And even Guterres mentions it in his report that he gave back on 8 June to the Economic and Social Council of the UN. The unfortunate thing is, it's nice to look at numbers. They've got a whole database of numbers. And to cite to you some of the numbers, they had data sets or data points for about 330,000 items from the 194 countries, just to be exact. The divorce from this was, or not the divorce, let me not say divorce, let me not use the word divorce. The latest about this, these data points were, is that from 330,000 in 2015, when the SDGs were inaugurated, launched, and thus implemented across the world, is that these 330,000 have grown to 3 million data points to provide a holistic picture for all member nations with regards to the 17 or 18 SDGs that they've got to live up to, work on, achieve their goals within, and do the necessary about. So now, I ask you this following question again. And it's not about the data. Don't think about the data. The data was just to supplement additional information in terms of your assessment. When you look outside where you're sitting and listening right now to the home run, you're looking outside your office, your house, your car, because it's drive time session for you, for those of you guys from public sector specifically. I know that some of you might have knocked off already because it's already 25 past four. If you're sitting in the cab or in your own personal vehicle and you look outside and you wonder, this road has looked the same for the past 30 years that I've been driving it back home from home to the office and from the office back home at the end of work day. Why has this road not changed? Now you'll immediately answer that question because you will know why that road has not changed. You will know. I don't want to give you that answer, but you will know. When we look at the dimension in terms of has any particular remarkable changes happened around you, within your lives, within your community's lives, so on and so forth, I'll say it's few and far. I'll say it's here and there. And I'm not talking about responses to needs like the malnutrition dimensions. We satisfied that with looking at, for example, Hartab and the Omaheke governor's regional addresses. And those were remarkable changes because those governors realized we need to change something in order to improve the lives of Namibians within those regions. They identified that. So, those are other remarkable things. But for those of you that have not seen those remarkable things, the question still is posed to you. Just think about it. Just think about it. Look at it. Try to assess in the past 5 years since COVID, since 2020, what has changed in my life? What has changed in my community? What has changed for me and my immediate family? And then you start answering your questions point by point from there. Now, the reason as to also why, if you were looking for my social media poster for today's session, a little bit of an apologies there. There's been a little bit of a technical glitch in terms of the design side of things. But the question, it's actually a hypothesis. It's a question. It's a position that I post, in terms of where do we find ourselves? Now, there's the SDG report and then there's Guterres' report. They somewhat speak to each other, but they somewhat also don't speak to each other. Why do I give these two particular different perspectives? Well, it's who actually authored the SDG report versus Guterres' actual his actual contribution within the organization that represents Namibia as well. That represents the other 193 or 195 member nations. It's that assessment. So I'll start from backwards to front. I'll start with the outgoing Secretary General. If you did not know, Guterres is ending this year, at the end of this year, his term. And they are looking for someone new. And so far, it's between, I think, did Baerbock stand? The former German International Relations or Foreign Relations Minister. The guy from the IAEA, Rafael Grossi. I did not know that he's an Argentine. I thought he would have been Italian, but he's an Argentine. And then there's a third guy, or fourth. There's actually two more candidates that also had to do presentations back in June or last month in July in front of the General Assembly. So now we can obviously see that there's another particular dimension influencing, for example, the track record of the SDGs and their influences and their developments going ahead. So what did Guterres say? What did he submit before the SDG report? Guterres cited that the present, his report, this council report. The present report provides a global overview of progress made since the adoption of the 2030 agenda for the SDGs back in 2015. This particular overview highlights areas in which decisive action is required to advance the achievement of the SDGs. And with just under 5 years to go, until 2030, the urgency to consolidate gains, accelerate progress, and to reverse negative trends is ever greater. So he's already putting the urgent message in paragraph one. Now, in terms of communication skills and, sometimes also, what do they call it? Persuasive writing. You always make your case as early as possible. So you set the tone for the reader, for whoever. Now, obviously, I've got to take this with a bottle of vinegar. Definitely with some salt and pepper, because I like my stuff. I like my, whatever I'm digesting, well seasoned on both sides, not just on one side. If you start off with the persuasive plea, the urgent call for action in the first paragraph, the opening paragraph of this document, it already... Okay, let me start again. There's actually two things in terms of when you start off, in terms of communicating with people. If you look at information without a specific lens or from a specific perspective, you would get the suggestion or the particular thinking, okay, this is what the information says. There's no particular tone associated to it. But as all of us have been trained, specifically for those of us that do read, when I say for those of us that do read, you sometimes realize, is there a tone or not? You try to detect a tone in the text. So now, I don't know if any of you have ever seen Guterres read his speeches, but from my experience, from watching the man read his own speeches, he tries to persuade, but you can see that he does not invest any emotion into the particular speeches that he delivers. There was one that he was highly emotional, and that was 2024's report. That Helmut and I also dissect here on the home run. And that particular report was the one that Helmut keeps referencing the phrase, the opening phrase of, it makes for sobering reading. Straightforward stuff. The 2025 edition of the same report was then handed over to a whole bunch of high-level experts, predominantly economists, because one of them was Jeffrey Sachs, the developmental economist that has worked with China, that has worked with Russia, in many other development economies around the world. And Sachs and his buddies, two of them or three of them, were from the UN, but Sachs was like a external consultant to work on the report itself. They went and glossed over the report. They took out the actual emotion from the report. The 2024 report is it's literature. It's, You feel like you're going in a roller coaster ride because it literally starts you off on it's like a Jason Bourne movie, basically. You just start off in the deep end of everything, and everything is against you, and you're like wondering, oh my goodness, the whole world is crumbling around. And then you get to 2025 and it's doused with sanitizer, painkillers, a little bit of morphine here and there to soften certain particular blows. And then, yeah, it just goes stale and mellow, like rice or maize meal. No taste whatsoever. The reason why I had to partner up the 2026 report alongside Guterres's economic and social report is primarily because I wanted to see what he was delivering and what is released to the rest of the world. So what he delivers, for example, just in that first paragraph, already sets the plea. So now it becomes the persuasion element. But here's the thing. I'm someone that is of a strong, I have a strong conviction. If you're going to try and persuade someone, let it be based upon a genuine need. So I know, okay, there are real needs in the world. And obviously Guterres' office as the Secretary General of the UN, he tries to represent that global appeal. Let's get things, let's get the global world, whatever is happening in the world. I didn't want to say order, because then I would have been speaking to the G7 or G20 countries, that only they must be in control of everything. Let's get all the affairs of the world in order, from conflict to inequality to balancing the natural environment's needs, to looking after and conserving the natural environments, to ensuring that we phase out the harmful chemical substances and the other particular products that come from the extractive industries, that we sort out international tax frameworks in order to capture and to collect the necessary taxes from entities, individuals, and potentially other particular elements that might be, you know, not paying their dues in the modern day tax considerations. But then you immediately realize how big this list is. You can obviously see how big this is. So the Secretary General of the UN, that's their mandate. That's their load. That's their burden. You then cascade it further down to try and understand, okay, so as Namibia, where does Namibia fit into many of these particular things? Now, currently right now, and this is the confusing part about our messaging, this is what we are projecting. I still have to properly go through the oil and gas content, you know, to analyze, to see what major developments popped up. But just for interest's sake, I popped off a query to David and just asked him, listen, David, what major significant thing happened from the oil and gas conference last week? The response was straightforward, nothing, Dwight. Which my next response would be, what are we doing? What are we doing? And this is a straightforward plea to both the president and the minister of industries, mines and energy. What are you guys doing? Amplifying the voice of oil. Oil is a pollutant. The world is trying to move away from oil. Why are you trying to add more problems to Namibia's problems? Our problems are based around our society. Now you want to bring a problem that is nothing, that none of us can work with. None of us. Namibia doesn't have the money to deal with an oil spill. We don't. Namibia doesn't have the expertise to respond to a disaster caused by an oil spill. That is both from an ecological to, which is environmental, sorry, I almost mentioned environment within the ecological dimension, to a social element as well. We don't have the expertise to respond to a disaster that comes from an oil spill. We don't. Japan is still paying Mauritius for that tanker that crashed back in 2020. Japan is still paying Mauritius for that thing. It's either Mauritius or Seychelles, one of the two island nations. They're still paying them. They are still cleaning it up. Why? Because here in the Indian Ocean, those two islands, Seychelles and Mauritius, they literally the coastlines are naturally protected environmental ecosystems. They've got reefs and coral reefs. If you don't know what a coral reef is, it's a specific kind of ocean organism. It's not something that you can see on land. So you won't know what a reef is on land. There is no reefs on land. You only find reefs in oceans. You only do. The largest one is close to Australia. It's the Great Barrier Reef. So now I ask you, why are we amplifying the voice of something that firstly draws conflict? That's where Sudan is. That's where Sudan is. Go and look at Sudan. That's where Libya is. That's why Libya is not stable today. That's where Iran is. That's where Iran is. That's basically where much of the oil-producing world currently finds itself. So why are we amplifying the voice, the interests of something? We still have not figured out how we're going to benefit it. I'll pop it off to David, don't worry. David just stepped in right now. David, you like that mic, ne? Okay, you can use that mic. Yeah, you can use that mic.
I do what they like.
Okay. So, obviously, as we start off this discussion, just welcoming David, we obviously have an interesting thing in terms of these two reports, David, that I also shared with you, these two pieces of literature. But before, you know, you come in with a contribution.
Yeah.
In terms of, I can understand Guterres persuading the world, but specifically what I've looked at is I come from three realms of persuasive communication. There was advertising, where an advertiser, meaning a business, persuades a consumer, please buy my thing.
Yeah.
Media companies, please read or view or consume our messaging.
No, join us now.
Yeah. Or what's the other one? Oh, no, four. I've been exposed to four. Politics, where politicians tell you, please vote for me. Even though in Namibia for a long time they didn't have manifestos, just vote for me. You had to go find the manifesto in five different geographic locations.
Yeah.
And then you even have to try and compare. I mean, the one that would be delivered, let's say in Zamora Michelle, might be a cocktail tomato.
Yeah.
And the other manifesto delivered in Marintel might be a fully grown mutated tomato.
Yeah.
And the one that you would find, let's say, for example, in Ongwediva might be the regular standard red. You know, that tomato that goes from green to red?
Yeah.
The regular tomato. And then you would find just a yellow tomato for some reason in Hobabas.
No, you are right. You know, the manifesto might be the same, but the mode of communication is different.
Yeah.
You know, if you are, and politicians are very, and I'm always telling people that politicians are the most smartest people that you can ever find because they have a skills that most of us, we don't have. That is human relations skills.
Mm.
They understand how to mix love and pain. They can offend you today, tomorrow they'll make you happy.
Mm.
Why do you, and when people say, no, why do people always follow politicians? They have a lot of strategies that we do not know. And, in that aspect, what you have mentioned is very important to say. Different time require different mode of communication.
Yeah.
Maybe different documents too. And, persuasion is one thing to persuade because human beings, by nature, we are persuasive.
Yeah.
But are we persuasive for a good reason? Because if you are persuading me so that you can get something from me, which is you being a con artist, that's a different form of persuasion. But if you are persuading me to do something good or persuading somebody to do something right, then it's good.
Yeah.
But the context of Guterres, I have much respect to Antonio Guterres in the way he is communicating. He is frank, respectful, but in terms of numbers and achievement, that is a different thing. He really did his best.
Mm.
And he's one of the few SG that came during the most difficult time the world is facing. You compare him to the SG that served during the
Ban Ki-moon.
You compare even others during the Cold War when it was intensifying.
You know that those guys had some, I don't want to say, the ones pre-1990.
Yeah.
Because obviously since Namibia's independence, we had Boutros Ghali.
Yeah.
Then it was, who was the guy after Boutros? Before Kofi? There was a guy between Boutros Ghali and Kofi Annan.
Yeah, there is a guy. Ghali is the one from
Algeria.
From, okay, there is a guy from
is
Egypt.
Is he Algeria? No, that's Ghali, yeah.
Oh,
he's from Egypt.
The law professor, ne?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was Ghali, and then there was someone, and then there was Kofi Annan.
Then Moon.
Then Moon.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kofi was the longest serving, right?
Like, I cannot confirm that.
Cause you,
but I think it's not just two terms.
I think so.
Just two terms.
I have a sneaky suspicion.
No, just two terms.
Yeah.
Just two terms.
So, and then came Ban Ki-moon, and then that South African did that weird thing here in Windhoek, yes.
Oh.
Don't you remember the story? 2016. The guy that attacked
Ban Ki-moon.
Yeah. He flew.
Yeah.
Ban Ki-moon came to Namibia.
Yeah.
Flew to Namibia.
Yeah.
David, this is a funny thing.
Yeah.
Flew to Namibia
to
come and inaugurate
the
UN house. I think they did the renovations and stuff, you know, to it to spruce it up a little bit, the property.
Yeah.
Mm. Came, or it might have been a completely different event, like celebrating something that coincides with Namibia.
Yeah.
And then there was this open public engagement, but before we actually continue, we're quickly going to take the short break. Then I'm going to tell you the full story after. So we come back, dear listeners, from the particular short break right there, and where we left off, this is the home run. If you're just tuning in, this is the home run. I've got David here a little bit earlier than usual. Thank you, David, for coming in a little bit earlier than usual. we are here. Captain Divundu, that's now Helmut. He's not here for this week.
I'm standing by for the men, man.
Yeah. So when we obviously look at this particular development and where I left off. So the story time goes like this. So Ban Ki-moon comes specially here to Namibia, David, for whatever event was at that stage in 2016. Was it 2018? One of the 2 years.
Yeah.
So this South African travels all the way from Cape Town here to Namibia.
Mm.
On the day of the event, it was something like they were about to end like the speeches and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And then homeboy wants to storm onto like where the podium is, where the speakers are.
Yeah. You know, I think I read the story like that.
You know, have you ever heard of embarrassments, ne?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, why in my country?
My guy was beaten up. But you know that the UN representative is one of the most protected person, and they have tier one security compared to even better than a lot of presidency in terms of security.
Yeah,
because that is not only a diplomat, that is it's a whole international institution. Without him, look at the process that is going on now to take the new SG. And just really to get into that context, I think this conversation is timely, especially looking at where we have a new SG, especially by the end of December. And I'm also happy that, not being biased, but we have a very strong candidate as Africa. I'm very happy.
Who? Yeah, I forgot the other two candidates. There's a woman from Europe.
Yeah.
Then it's the guy from the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Yeah.
Rafael Grossi. Mm-hmm. Who are the other two again?
You have Macky Sall, and you
also
have...
Yeah. I'm sorry, David.
No, you have Macky Sall. Then now you have a lawyer, a diplomat, Dr. Otunu.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one is the one from Uganda.
Okay, yeah, let's rather go for the Ugandan. I won't go for Macky Sall, I'm sorry.
But you pose a very important question, especially looking at the main conversation for today, looking at SDG. Just before we go to SDG, do you know that Namibia played a major role in Sustainable Development Goals. Do you know that in the early 2000, before the Sustainable Development Goals, there was Millennium Development Goals,
yeah.
the 10 Millennium Development Goals. And remember, when you are at the School of International Relations or lesson on international relations, they always mention Theo Ben-Gurion. Because 1999 and 2000, he was the president of UN General Assembly. And he championed that conversation of United Nations Millennium Development Goals.
Yeah.
That's why they were just advanced. If you look at them, ending of poverty, gender equality, all these 17 sustainable development goals, you start seeing that Namibia has a role to play in sustainable development goals. And we must be champion in terms of making sure that they are really implemented. And not being a devil advocate, you taught me one thing yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Not being a devil advocate, one of the things that you also need to look at is that is it a bottom-up developmental approach or is it an up-bottom developmental approach?
Mm.
Because before you praise the world, what are you doing at home?
Yeah.
What, don't you have real good intentions that you don't need to be reminded? Because somebody with a good heart does not mean to make, does not, although it's formal and international standard, does not necessarily need to reference all the UN SDG. That's where the world is going, but where are you going?
Mm.
If the world is going that direction, where are you going? Is it the bottom up or is it, up bottom approach in terms of development?
Mm.
Then we can come to the report that you send me. I was not aware even of that, the one which is tracking progress of sustainable development goals, which is quite good. But when I look at where we are as a country and these 17 sustainable development goals, one of the things that we can point out is that maybe we did well with only two.
Mm.
The issue of gender equality,
and
the last one, the one for partnership.
Mm.
But when you look at all the others,
like real
15,
yeah.
in terms of practicality, you look at the quality education, you say, we have education, but is it quality?
Mm.
What defines quality education? Mm.
Even though our education system, remember the interview that I had with the teacher, not the teacher, the tutor, she's a doctor, meaning she's a chemist.
Mm.
And when I asked her back in June, doctor, when we look at Namibia's education, because remember that discussion was based upon demystifying our education system.
I think I remember.
She cited Dwight. You have to see that Namibia's education system currently, right now, is benchmarked against the Cambridge education system.
Mm.
But here's the thing, David. Mm. How many people do you think hears that reassuring message in Namibia about if you were under Cambridge, under the IGCSEs mm. and the HIGCSEs, it's the same system technically. But now you've just taken away the higher and the ordinary level.
Yeah.
Now you've made it just ordinary level and then advanced subsidiary level.
Mm-hmm.
The advanced is just you add an extra year on instead of saying, you must deviate or you must now have these two or multiple cohorts of learners that at grade 10 decide, I want to do just ordinary or I want to do just higher or I want a combination of both within my six subject curriculum. Or syllabus, sorry.
Yeah.
If you look at a situation like that, how many parents do you think are given that reassurance about, don't worry, we took away that confusion of the pre-2010s, the 2000s up to 2010. We took away that confusion where you were still trying to understand, must I do higher grade? Must I do ordinary?
Yeah.
What am I doing? Mm. Where am I? Will I pass? Will I reach? No. They standardized it.
I see.
But your question is right.
Is it quality?
Is it quality?
quality education is not defined by the number of graduates that you produce.
True.
Quality education is defined by the content that you are giving and also the transformation that you are giving to the people that you give education. You know, Zimbabwe had, and I think it's the last time I'm going to refer in Zimbabwe.
No, you can refer to Zimbabwe.
There is always a lot of good case studies about Zimbabwe.
Mm.
one of the best things that all the Zimbabweans would not take from the late Mugabe, whether they you hated him or you liked him,
is the man was a former teacher, you know.
Yeah. I think it's the first job, ne?
Yeah, he was a former teacher.
Access to education.
Yeah.
And not only any education, access to quality education.
Yeah.
When you are coming from Great Zimbabwe University, when you are coming from university in Zimbabwe, not any, those standard universities, you go to UK, they will give you a seat at the high table.
Mm.
Because you are speaking their language, you are reasoning like them, and you are an independent thinker. That's why... Look at universities. I was looking at look at UNISA, look at VETS, look at Harvard, look at Cambridge. How many Zimbabwean citizens are there? They are not only there in terms of theories, but they are practical implementers. Somebody from Zimbabwe with a master's degree in marketing can come to Namibia, does not have a job, start selling brooms, but become a best broom sellers in the whole street. It's true. What is this telling you? It's not only education of theories and work.
I'm glad that the viewers didn't see my face because
you know it's an education of survival
and
also building something from that and what you make out of it. That is why if we have just to take from SDG 1 to SDG 17, whether we are using the report presented by the Secretary General of UN, or we are just looking at Namibia to say, zero hunger, where are we?
Yeah.
End of poverty, where are we? We try to eradicate, we tried to with food bank, we tried with all these things, where are we? Quality education, where are we? Is our education really of quality? It's accessible, and accessibility and quality is two things. Yeah, you can have a lot of money, but you are selling with Kwacha at an international platform where people have US dollars and people have pounds and euros.
That's
why in us analyzing where we have gone, I think it's closer to home. All the SDGs are closer to home because they are speaking to our problems that we have.
Yeah.
I look at clean access to clean energy. Today I was just speaking to Moremi and I asked him a question to say, Chief, if you gave a good report about energy infrastructure, some are worn out, some are in good standard, but if you look at, for example, NABDEB, there is a red flag, especially in terms of electricity infrastructure. Then I asked to say the possibility of increment in terms of electricity price. He said no. And he gave me an answer I did not expect. No, he said, David, it's better to increase the price of electricity with a reason of upgrading electricity infrastructure than the cost of a blackout, which is understandable.
Which is
something I did not expect. Now, coming back to SDGs, if you speak about access and clean energy, where are we? You can't tell me green hydrogen. We are just starting. We just arrived.
But the energy from green hydrogen, remember, that first part won't be for us, Namibia.
No. Even though, is it yet connected to the grid? That is what it
won't be.
It's not part of the reporting yet.
Yeah, it won't be.
Look, green hydrogen is a very good project, but it's not part of the reporting. When you are reporting our progress, we may report about infrastructure which were established. But when you speak about, for example, contribution to energy, it's not part of our progress report.
Yeah, in like 10 years or like, let's say 15 years.
That one is a different story.
It won't be part of it.
No, that one is a different story. That one I don't know about it. But in terms of energy, terms of fertilizers, it's not yet part of our reporting. But really, if you just take the checklist to say, Namibia, here, where are you? Gender equality, we went beyond. You can't say we went beyond.
I'm a bit reserved on gender equality.
No, we are good.
We are good.
We are good.
In the politics realm.
No, not only in the politics. Look at corporate.
Which corporate?
No, just look at the private sector.
Yeah.
No, gender equality, we are good. The question only that we need to do, that we need to ask, and without any discrimination, when we achieve that, is that what we expected? Because we have proven a point to say a black, or not to say just a black, a woman is capable when empowered, when given an opportunity, when given a room to lead, then we did all what we can do. Then we ask ourselves a question to say, what is the cost of us coming here and what is the impact of it? Parliament is almost 50-50. Women and
but
men.
You know, you can't apply for jobs in parliament.
I want to bring a point.
Okay.
You have even the one of the few speakers in Africa, maybe in the world, which are women. The question that we are asking is that, what is the impact of that to the national development? That's where people are going to beat you up to say, is it better off now that we have achieved that, or we need to make sure that it's not only about the gender equality, you getting into the room, but it's also about you being productive. Yeah, because there's always a debate between competency and equality, to say those who are empowered are the capable one and are they able to do something. But gender equality, really, that one I can bet on it to say Namibia, we did well.
Yeah.
We did well. Maybe we need another things that can complement that. Then you can talk about energy, every other things. But partnership, I'm also building when I at number 17. I'm also building on your point from yesterday. Are the partnership that we have built, sustainable partnership that we have built, are they productive, or we partnership of understanding each other?
Do you know that I read, David, I read again, once again, about an MOU in another media platform.
You made me laugh yesterday.
I was like, another MOU? Why are these Namibians so in love with MOUs? I mean, David, when you propose something there, you would, let's say you're a political leader, you go and propose something to your executive director and your directors in your ministry, and you go like, listen guys, there's this thing, and we obviously want to cascade it or drive it through the ministry into the Namibian economy so that the Namibian economy can link up and work in close tandem with the ministry. Whatever ministry it is, guys, don't worry. They do have functionary roles in the Namibian economy.
Yeah.
But then you hear about MOU and you're like, "Ay, doch."
We understand each other.
Just to understand each other.
Yeah, but the question is that if you ask a question to say, where are we after 10 years? Can you really, what is your take on, apart from now, SG report, what do you think Namibia have done well in the past 10 years? Because we cannot just say no. There are maybe things that we have done well. Maybe you look at that. What have we done well?
I'll use two of the governors. Okay, I'll use Omaheke governor, Nganate's particular state of the region address, the one where he cited that he literally convinced people of a way of life. They were living this way of life, animal husbandry. He convinced them, start planting your own food.
Yeah.
Because he gave them the opportunity to say, listen guys, there is no money to come and give you in your pockets. There is no job to come and give you so that you can go to work.
Yeah.
Here is tools, projects, initiatives. Start growing your food. That's why he made the claim, when we dissected on that, I think it was 2 weeks back when we looked at, Omaheke's state of the region address. 2 weeks back, he bragged literally to say, Omaheke is now covered, is now the region with the most irrigated land in the country.
Under irrigation.
Okay, under irrigation.
No, it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the most agricultural productive region under irrigation, which means that they are dry, but they are using artificial. Yeah.
And they're literally, they're trying to change the ways of many Omaheke residents.
No, that is a very strong argument. It's a very strong argument. Not everybody can do that.
Because his region comes from a disaster risk, but the disaster risk was malnutrition. It was food based.
No, his region is just, there have been a lot of risk there. And it's a good thing that he mentioned that. And, I think the president has also looked at away the options.
Yeah.
To say, for me to have a last man standing among all governors, remember that, it's only him who survived.
He's the only one that survived.
He's the only one. And you can't survive just because you are politically favored. I think there are things that, we can learn from Ganate, or others can learn from Ganate, and also maybe he has a good team. You know, there are people that you
know.
That
he complained. He complained about some councillors there in his thing.
No,
because he said some of the councillors were trying to be political about the welfare. You know, the welfare dimension of the projects.
Mm.
He said apparently the councillors were trying to look for some way to politicize, but negatively politicize the projects. And he was even saying, and you want to play politics like this? Okay, look, I'm not a fan of Gnate, but I understand his region's concerns.
No, I think, there are people that you don't see. Maybe a person has a best, you know that you can have a best PA who keep you on top of your game, then you do better.
Yeah.
You can have a best advisor, even a friend that can improve. Because if one thing that Namibian we need to do is that, if I'm always advising people and I don't get advice, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
Because I'm always telling people to say a good friend is somebody who is equivalent to an advisor.
Mm.
I see wrong things that you do, but I pointed them out, whether you are angry or not, but you know I mean good.
Mm.
And that's also needed in leadership,
to
say you are not the smartest among the all, but maybe he also listen. Because sometimes you just need to listen. You are empowered to say, no, you brought me this project and it's really work. Let's try it.
Yeah.
That's why I think with Maheke, it's a different scenario. But apart from that, what other things are we doing well?
I don't want to talk about transport because no one can eat a road.
Which transport is it?
I'm just talking about infrastructure, the roads. No one can eat a road.
Do you know that you only have one form of transport? Which one are you talking about? Which one? Is it roads, infrastructure? Maybe it's good.
Road infrastructure, no, it is good. Yeah. No, it is good. Mm-hmm. Banking, but financial I mean, system? But banking is privately run. I mean, it's privately operated because the investment technically comes through from a private sector component. So, what else is there? Mining is private sector run. That's what I'm mentioning the things that Namibia is good at currently. Mm. Namibia's cricket team and cricket performance, which is also private sector run. So I'm mentioning private sector initiatives that are working.
Because you know what today, you know what I wanted you to get into.
Yeah.
I wanted you to get into, you know, our 17 SDG.
Yeah.
Where are we doing well? Which one have we maybe achieved?
That is for national planning, your bras. And national planning with APRM.
No,
it's for them to come answer that.
No,
question.
Me, I can take the paper. Then I look at no poverty. That one we fail. Zero hunger. That one
maybe. We still have 4 years.
No, you. Let's go back 10 years.
Yeah.
We have been around. No, give me a red pen.
David, you're not a teacher.
do you know what the name? I told my father one day, I don't want to become a teacher. I said, no, you are going to be a teacher. The first job I got, you know what it is? I diverted professionally, but my first job was to become a teacher.
your dad was even telling you, don't worry. You can say no. You will get it.
You cannot be a teacher in terms of qualification, but you still have to be like me at some point.
Yeah.
But if you give me a red pen, I can move to say at number one. Because if you are marking, you cannot say you have tried.
This is the SDG indicator.
Yeah.
Just so it's an interactive dashboard from the UN about Namibia. So you can see potentially.
No. Okay. Let's say no to poverty.
Yeah.
What's the level of poverty that we have in Namibia?
But that's the question. The NSA didn't answer that question.
But the financial inclusion will tell you who is poor, who is not poor.
No, but you know the word, you are the political scientist, you know that the word poor is a political term.
No, people are just trying to simplify. If you fail to meet the basic need of an individual, that is water, that is shelter,
that is access to education, healthcare,
health, and also happiness. And those things will equate to happiness.
So we now get into the happiness report that we also dissect. And have you seen that report? How that report was put together?
Yeah, I've seen. Then you can also see where you press it to say how many Namibians in the past 10 years were taken out of poverty.
Mm.
What were some of the challenges? What can we do? Because you just take 17 scale of analysis that we are using.
Mm.
Now you come to number 2, zero hunger. Because zero is a big word.
But we just recently had malnourishment, children dying because of because of malnourishment? Basically of starvation.
Maybe here you can say, you cannot say we did not achieve it. You can say there were trials and there is much effort, especially to...
Now you're politicizing that.
No, I'm not politicizing. Yeah. I want to give you numbers.
Yeah.
There is much effort, especially to come to this thing of zero hunger. Mm. Look at our budget.
Mm.
We want industrialization. We are spending more on social welfare. Speak about the pension of women, and I mean pension of disabled.
Mm.
Maybe that one we can debate on it, but the hunger is still there.
Mm.
Food, we are not coming to... Yeah.
People still need to eat every day. Yeah.
Good health and well-being, number three.
I'd make it a question. I'd make it a question mark, because here's the thing. Accessibility seems to be something, and for some reason, we as Namibia, we cannot... We have to find the synergy between private healthcare and public healthcare.
But if somebody have to take Namibia and other countries in Africa, then we say in terms of SDG, who is ahead at number three?
Mm.
Are we going to get the top 10?
I'd say no, David.
But top 15?
Maybe top 20.
Top 20, we are getting it there.
Do you know why I say that?
Yeah.
If you look at the independent, I'm now getting into like the Pan-African political indicators that started from the 1950s into this direction.
Mm.
Okay, let's first get the scholar's contribution. Eagle FM, good afternoon.
Oh, thank God you accommodated me earlier.
Super early. Don't worry, Uncle Bona.
You need to thank us.
So thank you very much. Good afternoon, my colleagues.
Afternoon, Uncle Bona.
I think I can also call you at our own level, at our own level, at our own competence, at our own common, I don't know. So I can call you my learning friend. How is the evening? Show afternoon.
it's okay so far. It's okay so far, Uncle Bona. We have to maintain our what do you call that thing, our train of thought where we still left off.
Yeah, no, that's good. I'm happy that you afforded me an opportunity just to talk about. We also want to rejoice, you know. And more especially today, I just wanted to have some kind of conversation on brainstorming on what the Chief Justice said, you know. I think it's today's newspaper. I just came across this article. Chief Justice put focus on judicial well-being. I know he's now talking about on the his side, judicial side. So maybe we also have to talk about social side and political side, like you were saying, the councillor or whoever that you are talking about is the governor. And I love that governor so much.
Who, Angubona?
The one of Omahike.
Oh, Nginate.
So the political leadership that side.
Yeah.
So because the way they do things, see? I'm just talking from the experience. I know that Omahike has been the way maybe, I don't know, the apartheid system, the way the people were segregated. And that's where you find most of these farm schools,
farm worker communities and the generational farm workers,
The farm workers.
Well, it's not just there, Uncle Bona. I think that's it's everywhere below the red line, in where you find the small farming communities. That you find those characteristics everywhere across Namibia.
Yes, but the peculiarity of that situation of that side is because it's where you have most of the Sun people.
Yeah.
My own people actually there.
Yeah.
And the way they were to be integrated in the schools, because most of those farm schools, they were actually only made for the white colleagues. You understand? They were not for each and everyone. So I'm not talking about from the transition. So, you know, most of those, and I love them, you know, those my colleagues, the white farmers there, they actually allowed the states also to make sure that those schools are accessible to, you know, those farm, you know, children, for those, you know, working in the farm. And I love that transition. And we should all be proud of it, you know. So now, the councillor, perhaps, and in the context of this, my contribution today, I just want to hammer much on what the Chief Justice is talking about.
Mm.
The demand that is expected or required from the judicial officers. I thought maybe this was just a joke.
Yeah.
When we talk about the parliamentarians, we talk about those, not talking about those who are just working in the court.
Yeah.
No, we are now talking about, you know, the judicial leadership, even when it comes to court management. So the people that are working in there, who are dealing with those complexity of the cases.
Yeah.
King David, are you there?
He's here.
Why is he not responding? He must respond.
You must respond, David. Say something.
I'm here.
You are just here listening, and I'm
listening to your contribution. I don't want to disturb you. And we are together. Why you are so concerned with the direction of Chief Justice?
No, the direction of Chief Justice is because he's actually reminding us and reminding you people that, yes, let's be talking about the burden, the burnout, the well-being of those people who are there. You know, even when they run around, those in the fact-finding mission.
Mm.
And I know you are also looking at not really their competencies, because competency, because you can have the competence, but you might also fail in some other areas. You understand? Mm-hmm. Because of this well-being that you are talking about. Because and these are the people actually whom we are expecting that, yes, this is the system is not working for us, and this other one is not working for us, and this other one is the this one.
Are you going to the celebration of Heroes Day tomorrow? Are you not a hero?
I thought you could have started with that.
Yeah.
Of course, it's not in your own issue. Even the one that I'm concerned with here
are
now.
Are we going?
Why not? Why not?
put on your combatant uniform and show them that you were also here. But I'm also a fighter for economic emancipation.
I have the both of the Kakongola and the Kakongola.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, guys.
Not a problem.
I'm happy that you are talking about those issues, but you should also recognize and acknowledge the burden and the kind of load work upon the parliamentarians, those political leadership, for them to, you know, create some kind of conducive environment also for them.
As long as they don't throw stun grenades at each other like that National Youth Service debacle that happened there in Swakop, I am fine with them.
It's because of the stress, Moose.
There was no stress. There's no stress, Angabona. What stress is there for paid vacancies that technically should be put forward as, you know, any particular external advert to source any competent Namibia to fill the space?
Yeah, those are some of the administrating bottlenecks that we need to iron out and try to see how we can create those ethical leadership. So it is a process, because, and I believe when you look at what is happening there, is it political issues or administrative issues? Which is also
it's both, Uncle Bonner. It's both. Process, it's yeah. both. I mean, why would such a particular event to nominate the National Youth Council or whatever that thing's name is, which has technically not represented me in any scenario? Because, in all earnesty, It's only for politically connected youth activists to run an organization who has to find economic outlets and solutions for Namibians, for Namibian youth who are disenfranchised and who don't have access to opportunities, but these guys have access to these opportunities. So in essence, it's an elitist organization with an elitist agenda, with an elitist mentality. Wow, look at Dwight, you know, thinking it up like that.
Yeah, no, actually.
Dwight must not be too revolutionary.
Yeah, no, it's actually that thing. That's why when we pass on the torch to you guys, we are required and expected to demonstrate the those kind of ethical leadership style.
Angobona, you know that ethical, technically, you know, it's based on a matter of opinion.
Yeah, no problem. You can say it in whatever from any other area. All we are saying is that the way you demonstrate your leadership quality and the way you want to create that that understanding, that they, no, because you are saying that the places is not transparent.
I didn't say it's transparent, Angobona. They are trying to be transparent, but if you look at who can participate in being involved, you technically come from an exclusive collection of youth, political youth activists. So that means for the average Namibian out there, which is the majority of Namibians, we are not politically active.
David, is it counter-revolutionary or is it because maybe people, maybe lack of understanding or what is it?
Maybe yeah, the conversation is revolutionary.
Yeah?
He's saying it's revolutionary, Angobona.
No, revolutionary and the counter-revolutionary.
Not counter.
He's saying I'm being revolutionary in this discussion. But yeah, Angobona, thanks for coming through.
Okay.
Goodbye, Angobona. See you later. Okay, David, beside me and my revolutionary particular perspectives on that organization, which I still till today do not know why it exists, even though there might be some piece of motivational thing that came through from the former Ministry of Youth and Sport. But yeah, where we left off, did you see the indicator dashboard that I showed you?
Yeah,
about the SG. It looks bad for Namibia, eh?
It's not only looking bad, it's reminding us that we still need to move because everything that we are still trying to do,
yeah,
they are what is stated there. Let me look at them again.
Yeah.
Because everything that we are discussing now, because if you look at clean water and sanitation, which is number 6.
Yeah.
And we just take a red pen and there I'm a t-shirt.
and I think it's orange, ne? I think it's orange.
Yeah. Green water and sanitation. Where are we? Have we really tried them?
Yeah.
Are we good?
And remember, we've got an agency. We've got a ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect, it's a wide ranging, what do they call it? Coordinated reporting mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But clean water. Here's the concern about clean water, David.
Yeah. Mm.
We are the only country in this planet, on this planet, with two deserts in our borders.
Yeah.
But if you are looking for clean water.
Mm. but you know what is very interesting?
Yeah.
What is very interesting is that we are cracking out of the shell.
Yeah.
When you see a lot of controversy around SDG,
mm.
it means that there must be a certain push within certain ministries.
There's a motivation.
Yeah, there's a motivation. It's only that maybe it's a coordination part. Because if I just have to move from point one, I mean from SDG 1 to 17, there is always a case within every SDG.
Mm.
There is always a case to say, if you speak about clean water and sanitation, there was that case of Kavango.
Which one?
You know, getting water from
Kavango Link. Oh, the river. Kavango, the pipeline.
Yeah, the pipeline.
Yeah.
There are always some movement that you are seeing. When you come to affordable and clean energy, there are those moves that you see, green hydrogen and the debate on nuclear.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? When you come to decent work and economic growth,
mm.
the moves are still there, but they are not result.
I believe, on that one,
yeah.
we are failing.
Come again?
I think on that one,
we are failing. I'm not, even all others we are failing,
yeah.
But there are moves. Minimum what? Minimum wage, national wage.
It's limited.
It's limited.
Yeah.
But you see that we are trying our best, but things are not working
at
this moment. Innovation and infrastructure, that one we have to discuss is maybe next year.
Maybe 50-50. Maybe 50-50. You say for infrastructure,
yeah.
Yes, but for innovation,
no.
Yeah.
Reduce inequality. Here we have one over 70 or over 100, because if you want to reduce inequality in Namibia, it's one over 100 because you have that one. South Africa have zero. I'm not a mathematician, but those who study mathematics,
you say we're just one position better than South Africa.
Yeah,
we're not South Africa.
No, we're not South Africa. South Africa got a zero
in
dealing with inequality.
Yeah,
unless we have to go and fragment it to say this one is what sustainable cities and communities.
I'd actually put that also at a zero.
But sustainable cities and communities.
We only have one certitude.
But you have communities, Chief.
I know. The communities are there, but it speaks with plural there of cities. So we only have one. And the downside is, it's the mindset. This brings us back to the conversation of yesterday, but I didn't mention it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It's the mindset of how the local authorities view the towns or the communities they live in. Remember when I explained to you that one day about Enana, that I can't figure out what Enana
is. But I think here we are going to debate, because if you speak about sustainable cities and communities, post 1990, I think we have seen a lot of communities, villages becoming village councils, becoming towns, then becoming municipalities. But
the process is also very slow.
No, the process is very slow.
Yeah.
But if you take a picture of Namibia in 1990,
you
may have them, but the sustainability part will be very difficult, because you have a city, then you have towns, you have village councils, but the question is that, are the people that are living within those
sustainable?
Are
they sustained by this urban center?
That is a critical question. But in terms of infrastructure, I'm always praising, Enana. It's one of the new towns that you can never find. But I did not used to travel to Hangwena. I used to hear Hangwena, but I think 5 years ago, I traveled to Hangwena. Then I look at the
road. I was going to ask a question, David. Yeah. How is it that you haven't traveled to Hangwena before?
That is also a very interesting answer to you.
You shouldn't tell Helmut, ne?
But people, when they say you are from the north, they think we are from the same area.
I never understand the thinking of many Namibians. But you were still saying
yeah. Just to say there, I think we have moved. And we still have a very, very, very long way to go, because we build infrastructure in terms of towns. Beautiful town in Hangwena region. I mean, beautiful town, beautiful road infrastructure, better than what you see. Ask anybody who is from there. Then you look at responsible consumption and production. Consumption. Do you consume what you produce?
No.
Do you produce what you consume?
Actually, very little, because
we
have to supplement it with importing.
Mm.
So that means we are being planned for by South Africa, meaning that the level of production that we are at is also. But it brings in another dimension there, David, that responsible consumption. It's what the EU and who's the other country that did? It's what the EU and Finland have been presenting in the first half of this year about the circular economies.
Yeah.
Look, I love Finland. Okay, I don't love Finland, because it seems Finland has this weird perversion with only one side of Namibia.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, ne?
Yeah.
Because Finland only knows one part of Namibia, and then they think, oh no, we are there in Namibia. And then you're like, no, dude, go see the rest of Namibia, please.
Go and check.
Namibia has different faces, different images, different people. But here's the lovely thing about Finland, David. Remember your comment of yesterday of simplicity?
Yeah.
Simplification.
Yeah.
Make it practical.
Yeah.
How is it that you have, on a harbor, on the space of that Namport harbor of ours at Walvis, on that space, you've got a green hydrogen production plant.
Mm.
You have a nuclear power plant.
Mm.
You've got storage, mm. meaning warehouses.
Yeah.
You've got a transportation infrastructure.
Mm.
And you've got water reticulation infrastructure associated on the same piece of land, mm. all acting in tandem.
Yeah.
All different businesses
mm.
adding economic value.
Yeah.
And that's not even the whole thing of the circular economy dimension. That's just one example.
You know. I think you are very much correct. The thing about a circular economy, where yeah. one feed another,
and they, remember, they you have to look at that other. In tandem with the sustainable cities and communities.
Mm-hmm. No, I see.
Yeah.
No, you have been. Is it you and Matthias? You have been updating me on circular economy. I think we have. You have done some few works on it,
mm.
even in terms of writing contribution in that aspect. But looking at that, where are we?
I'll tell you today
mm.
where we are. Mm. We only have the, what's that thing's name that is in Koreanghap? The buyback, the garbage buyback or the rubbish buyback center.
But that you know that the scrapyard thing.
Yeah. Just hold on, David. Yeah. Just hold on. We quickly take an ad break, guys, and we come back after this.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was my man. You've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just give more ice. Anyways, long story short. Oh hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. So we come back, dear listeners, besides the side joke and the off mic joke slightly, in terms of, just some colleague or office banter that I had to hear now. But yeah, so David, you were still making the particular point of, the circular economy thing.
Yeah. No, I was indicating that circular economy brought opportunities and problems also in Winduka. So, no, because some of the things you see that help is coming.
Yeah,
the cover is here. When you have something that you are not using anymore,
mm.
you can dispose it at a certain cost.
Mm.
But you also have, in entrepreneur thinking, that can turn into crimes. You know the business of copper.
Yeah,
of copper.
The copper cable thieves.
The copper cables.
Yeah,
that was motivated by that circular economy, because yes. because remember. Circular economy can operate, but in a most highly unequal society, circular
yeah.
economy can become problematic.
Yeah.
Because even the fighting for the scraps
mm.
is become a problem. Even fighting for the cans around
mm.
is becoming a problem because of the number of people that you have that do not have access to those things.
Mm. You just need to
touch. Yeah, I have it.
Okay. No.
Then it turns into crimes, but it really helps people. You really it really helps people, and I think it's a good strategy, but it also tend down to say to what extent, because it can also become a survival of the fittest. Because if we are selling garbage, there is also going to be a master who is controlling the bin,
yeah,
and who is controlling those things. But really, I think is something that other cities should imitate. I remember, I think, interview you once regarding that aspect. Now let us, can we move to climate action?
Go for it. I mean, we even spoke about climate action like today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In terms of climate action, I think you can also connect to circular economy. There's almost one.
I think Namibia, yeah. Here's the thing, David. You know, when we were kids, in like school, in like primary school, you know, you would always see the grade 7 learners there, and you are like this grade 1, grade, you know,
yeah.
And you see all the nice things that those teenage kids are doing, and you're like, I want to be there, but I'm still a 6-year-old. Yeah. That's Namibia.
No, you know, one thing I'm always telling people, especially climate action. Those who understand climate are not the one who are running climate industries.
Yeah.
No, I have a few friends of mine who are in the climate space. And one of them is a scientist. We have also, I think, we have engineers and people who study nature conservation and all these things. Then I told them, you guys are going far because you understand that thing. You studied it. And it's better for you to be the one who is running that. You know the interesting part, Kami?
Yeah.
You find people who are running climate-related initiatives.
And projects, yeah.
And projects that, it's there because there are other areas of climate where you have climate financing and all these things. But you need an expert to lead that industry. Because the discussion of climate in Namibia is based on opportunities. And not really to say we are not impacted by climate changes.
Yeah.
But we don't have experts that are leading.
Yeah,
because if we have experts that are leading, the lecturers and the researchers of environmental science were supposed to head these things. The student of environmental science, natural resource management, even agriculture, depends on where they are. They were supposed to head this. There are some institutions that have degrees and qualification in green finance. Those are the people who are supposed to run this.
No, David. Do you see what is the issue? I'm sorry. I'm slightly going to...
No. It's fine.
Yeah. I'm going to deviate from you. Do you see what's the issue? What I've realized, even like in the green industries things, there's a lot of these specially trained Namibians.
Yeah.
Do you know what they go do?
Yeah.
They act insular. They do this.
Yeah.
They only talk to a David and a Dwight who maybe has like partial knowledge of their work.
Yeah.
But do they go talk to their family members and then their communities?
I hear you.
But here's the thing. They want us, the media, to be their mouthpieces for them, meaning to promote without being paid. And I'm not going to take extra work on behalf of them.
It's not going to happen. I was expecting you to say something, but...
No. They should be the change makers.
Yeah.
You see, every lawyer that we are training
should
be a lawyer that has to go and teach 20 kids,
20
disadvantaged kids that can't read or write the impacts of the constitution and laws if they commit a crime.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a journalist.
Yeah.
If for every doctor and nurse we train, those people should go and internalize the knowledge in their communities. It shouldn't be a journalist.
No, you're absolutely correct.
Now you and I, we are overreading, overstimulating our brains, overthinking things.
Yeah.
We are literally jack of all trades and masters of zero in this economy. And you know what's the thing? We know how to communicate.
No, I hear you. I hear you.
Oh, this is what I meant about Denmark. This is the waste buyback we need. This is a vending machine. This is what I also explained to Helmut.
So is it giving the what? Is it giving the price of it?
No, yes. If
is
you
it weighing or what?
Yeah, you put in, you see what this guy's doing. He's putting in each can and each plastic bottle. So he gets, you remember, you know that when you buy your airtime from certain airtime vendors, you get like a token with a paper on it, with a value, with a PIN number.
Yeah.
It gives you something similar.
Yeah.
You take that piece of paper, you walk into the shop, David. You convert what's on that piece of paper into the products that you want in your at home. And you have it right, which actually nullifies that thing you mentioned earlier about the possible criminality element. Because here's the thing. You take your garbage from your house.
Yeah.
You bought it with your money. It's your garbage. You actually own that trash.
Yeah.
You take that trash.
You know, when you are in a informal sector deep down.
Yeah.
You realize that people are fighting for trash.
I know. I see people them every week. Every week, I think tomorrow or Thursday is...
And that is a disadvantage of circular economy. But there's one guy who said, you know this copper thing that people are stealing?
The copper cables, yeah.
The copper cables. You know, street smart people, they always surprise me. I don't know where they're
adaptable.
Are they survivor tricks or what?
Did you know what they do? That thing I just mentioned now about the teachers, the doctors and so on, they communicate with each other. They actually help each other. There's a sense of community there.
Within the street.
Yeah.
What happened is that the scrapyard, when this secret economy came about, these guys realized to say, "Name man, it's very difficult to find copper wires, but there's a way there.
Let's create an artificial need."
That is the thing. you are reading me. What they did is that they make sure that between there they put a stone, or they put soil, because when it goes to a way, it will increase the standard, the quality, and the price.
Yeah.
Then these guys realized that they were making a lot of money.
Yeah.
But there's always somebody who's going to sell out and being caught. Then they realized to say, now these guys also become clever to say, no, streetwise, they are always ahead.
Yeah.
Then they change now to say, no, before we weigh this thing, we have to make sure that we hit it to see what is between so that we understand what is going on.
Mm.
But the send out the matter is that an unequal society is very difficult to develop.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to develop because when you are bringing about a tank of water, somebody is stealing pipe from that water just to build his fence, not necessarily knowing that that is help which is coming because there is a lot of needs in that area. That's why a multi approach. What's a better way? A multi-dimensional developmental approach is better because if you bring it one by one, you will end up not doing anything.
Yeah, because you might create a dependency situation.
Yeah.
But I've also seen specifically, David, there are so many things there that in those first SDGs that you referenced there that we could have sorted out, for example, with like a basic income grant for every Namibian.
No, you are right.
You just give them a stipend of money. Doesn't matter what age group you are up until, let's say, 18. Because up until 18, you're supposed to be still in school. You're not supposed to be getting this money.
Yeah.
So let's say up until 19 years of age, you get a basic income grant from the government for whatever resources Namibia mines out. David, you will not believe it, but you will see entrepreneurial endeavor flourish just like that. The report exists.
No, even without entrepreneurial
endeavor
thriving, the thing of what is killing our economy, and people don't speak about it. There was never an economy that was built by, and I'm saying this with much respect, by a foreigner. An economy is built by a local. Domestic economy. If you empower domestic economies, that is where Africa and the free trade area is also going. If you empower this and with your basic income grant to say, do you know where that money is going to be? For that money to start a business, for that money to entrepreneurial activities becoming flourishing, the money continue to circulate within. Continue to circulate. Because if I get my hard earned money, then I spend all the money on the products that are not made in Namibia.
Yeah.
Everything is going.
Yeah.
And that's why those who understand how the financial market is going, they will understand to say you lose more money because you are always running on deficit. You're always running on deficit. You lose more money, but if you empower these small people that are on the ground, they are already empowered by the secular economy. They will not fight anymore.
And now that they get a basic income grant, they will know, okay, I can look after certain basics. Yeah. Look, some of them might fall into habits. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
The person is a citizen. That's the only qualifier that you need.
Yeah.
And then if you give them the money, they'll improve their lives. Now you have to hear weird reports from Ministry of Gender who has to try and help the street kids do this. But do you know what those three kids do? If you talk to them, those guys that are also the same guys with the what's the thing's name that generate the artificial economy for cable theft. If you ask those guys, ask them, did you start off as a street kid? And if they say yes, and you ask them, okay, so why did you leave home? Why did you leave your support base, which is your family? They will tell you it's because of the situation at home was untenable, or they were exposed to substance abuse.
And believe me, Oné, there is no person that you find in the street that is happy to be in the street. No. It's few of them.
You are right.
And Maurice, thinking differently, especially when you look at somebody, look at this person in the street, say these guys are crazy. Mm. But if you go deep down to the background of that person,
yeah,
you'll be able to understand that, to say, how come we have this person in the street? There is no parents, whether poor or rich, who want their kids to be in the street.
Yeah.
Then we have to ask ourselves that question, to say, where is the problem?
Mm.
That's why your thing of basic income grant can come and complement, to say, there are those the apples, there are always those one who can be a rotten apple. That one is an obvious thing.
Yeah.
To say, not everybody. But the status quo of saying everybody who is outside home,
yeah,
deserve to be outside home, or is ungovernable.
And that's where we have to change our 1 over 100 versus South Africa.
Mm-mm.
We now have to make it literally like an 80 over 100.
Mm-mm.
You know, we push ourselves just that further away from South Africa.
Mm-mm-mm.
But yeah.
No, that is it. Now, number 14 is life below water.
That has to speak to our coastline, our rivers, many of those aquatic environments.
Now, here, life below water, you already have a debate on phosphate.
It's not just phosphate.
Yeah.
It's our marine spatial plan. Because I asked back on World Oceans Day, the director responsible for that part in Ministry of Agriculture.
Yeah.
But before we actually continue, we're quickly going to get a ad break. No, not now. Sorry, it's not now.
Yeah.
It's an hour from now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I asked the lady, Madame de Almeida, in that World Oceans Day discussion, is our marine spatial plan that was under Ministry of Fisheries still active? And she said no, because there's one or other thing that we have to, as Namibia, still have to satisfy with regarding, there's an international treaty.
Yeah,
about maintaining the ocean based ecosystems, for example, our coastline.
Mm.
So we have to come up with a new marine spatial plan, David. In essence, what is a marine spatial plan? To the listeners out there, a marine spatial plan basically is all activities that you are conducting on the sea, close to the sea, next to the sea. That's now our coastline. You must account for these activities like in a comprehensive document that lays them all out, that has stakeholder inputs. And then you try to regulate from that document. Now, it might sound like a policy.
Yeah.
It probably might sound like an improved piece of legislation about marine resources, or the overall marine resources as they are. And like you said, the debate that's currently happening.
Yeah.
But here is the other question I would like to throw out to the Namibians who are the environmental guardians, who have an environmental guardianship angle to their spirit and to their argument basis. The question is, do you want Namibia still to be number two in the world, like David now cited, to be number 1 over 100, South Africa 0 over 100, number 1 over 100 in inequality, or do you actually want to see real change? Because the real change will come, David, if we start actually understanding true benefits from an MSP, the Marine Spatial Plan. But like I said, we apparently need a new one. When that's going to happen, the answer I got back in May is we don't know. So we don't know, and we will stay at we don't know, because Namibia is a signatory to the International Marine Organization, the IMO, which is also confused for the International Migration Organization. They've got the same abbreviation, IMO and IMO. We are signatories to both those particular agencies, which are UN agencies. We don't know where we want to participate. But you know what's the funny thing? We went and through Namport concluded an agreement with the government of South Korea.
Yeah.
And the government of South Korea, guess what they are championing? Green shipping. A government is championing green shipping.
I hear you.
Now, I have to ask you this, David.
Yeah.
You asked the question earlier in the previous SDG, the one about environment, climate change.
Yeah.
Why can't we be a leader as a country with an innovation about climate change?
It's a good question, but the analysis here, particularly the what you gave me, what they are indicating that when it comes to Namibia, that climate action challenge remain score moderate, improving, insufficient to attain goal.
Yeah.
That is what they are saying. Indicator CO2, that I suppose is carbon dioxide emission from fossil fuel combustion. Speak about cement protection. No, what is being discussed here, and I think our analysis before even we go to what how Namibia is ranked, the green light is only on gender equality. That is the only thing.
I told you.
Yeah, it's only gender equality. And I think you were right. You were right about it. With poverty and other things, zero hunger, major challenge. If I just have to look at that, number one, no poverty is still a significant challenge. Where you have number three, good health, major challenge. And I don't know why major, but I think you are correct.
It's probably lack of information arriving on time, because just so our listeners know, that dashboard that David is busy watching there, just in front of him, it's an interactive dashboard by the UN. It's not the Namibian government or a development partner's dashboard about Namibia's SDG progress. It's a UN-run dashboard.
Quality education, significant challenge remains, score stagnation or increase at less than 50% of required rate. That is, we speak about quality, not accessibility. I think, you know that we are like a student who read all the chapters, but mastering only one or two. Let me say 24 chapters, we have 17 chapters, but we only mastered two.
Yeah.
Which means that other chapter, we have a general knowledge on what needs to be done. But most of them, although we have a general understanding of what needs to be done, we are still not doing it. Now let us move to 15. A life on land. This one has been a challenge for me to understand it. But speaking about, I think biodiversity on land.
Yeah, like you take everything from SDG, the one with smart cities and communities. You take that one. You take human life, animal life, and you put it like in the biodiversity cluster.
Yeah.
And then you compare the picture you will get in Namibia, David, from what I've been following for the past 5 years, is fragmentation on another planet. We are on Mars. Namibia is advanced at fragmented communication from all ministries. Today I had to find out the access and benefit sharing discussion. Do you know when was the last time I heard anything about that particular discussion? I think 2 years back. And I couldn't even attend the particular activity or event 2 years back. It's because it was clashing with another thing that I had, you know, basically attended or was busy attending. And if we look at such dimensions of information being generated about initiatives by our governments, just the government.
Yeah.
Private sector will go and do it. Private sector finds the easiest money. Let's assess, you know, how some of our demons in economic development function.
I hear you.
They will go where the easiest money is.
I hear you.
If they see that the road to get to a profit or to revenue is going to be a maze, plus it's going to be a major competition for resources, then they will say, nah, it's too much risk.
I have a surprise for you.
Yeah.
Let's go to SDG number 16. That is peace, justice, and strong institution. What do you think?
Strong, it's a mixed bag, but it's more on the positive. The reason why I say so, let's take Uncle Bona's comment now of the Chief Justice.
Yeah.
The Chief Justice is speaking towards the overall welfare of judicial practitioners, administrators and staff. But here's the thing, David. 2 years back, it is still a running joke of Home Run. 2 years back, we heard a standing committee of legislation and constitution asking the executive director of the Ministry of Justice and the executive director of judiciary, why prefabricated courtrooms weren't built across the country.
No, you are reading you are reading the UN SDG report on Namibia, and when you look at this to say peace, justice, and strong institution in Namibia,
yeah,
a major challenge remain. That's yeah. what is stated. But I'm also shocked because
I think you can I think you can press on that part where it says major challenges. No, and
the analyze syndication are here to say homicides.
Yeah.
Crime is effectively controlled. That is what indicated. Unsentenced detainees.
Yeah.
The way we deal with high-profile cases.
It's everyone. There's a recent story that came out that a judge literally had to tell the police, release a paralyzed inmate from detention. Do you know why? Because of the conditions. Firstly, is now disabled. The person is disabled. So, if you look at conditions, and from that standing committee's engagement 2 years back,
yeah,
that standing committee, David, did you know what they found out? For example, like the courtroom or the judicial staff or the, you know, just for the activity of dispensing justice in Omuthia. They had to travel from Omuthia, these staff members, to work in a police cell, a holding police cell, in the police station at Ondangwa. Now, in the act of dispensing justice, meaning that's for every jurisdiction across Namibia, every constituency, we technically have deficiencies. We've got major deficiencies. Then there's also the scenario in terms of how do we, and I'm not talking about modernizing by bringing in new laws. I'm talking about modernizing in terms of helping the judiciary achieve its goals. The judiciary, David, is still haunted by case backlogs.
Yeah. No, you know, there are indicators here. Where you have homicide, I hear you when you speak about the judiciary. You know where I should also ask a question there to say with our population that we have in Namibia, we are not 4 million yet. If we have to compare what we do, in terms of just in comparison in terms of percentage, if we were able to weigh the same weight that South Africa has, would we still be closer to each other?
Yeah,
because if in South Africa there has been records of 60 murders in a day, in Namibia we have one. But if you compare the population of Namibia and the population of South Africa, you realize to say we may even become more dangerous than SA.
Yeah.
If you put that into that scale of analysis, because if numbers don't paralyze you, you compare the just put in. If they don't paralyze you, you start realizing that there's a lot of things that we need to do. It's only that we are not a lot.
Yeah.
If this issue of gender-based violence continue to go on,
yeah,
every day you have cases like this.
Yeah.
But you have a population that is less than 4 million people. What would happen if you had
20? More. Yeah.
Yeah, because that is also
something. Or even 5. Let's cascade it.
Yeah.
If you go from 4 to 5 to 6 to 7...
If we are already complaining about the number of road accidents, regardless of us having the best roads infrastructure,
Whether or not every Namibian has a car, it's already accident. You're right.
Regardless of our inequality, then these are things that we need to look at. But I think in terms, I look at this. I think it was a bit unfair. But when you look at these indicators, you realize to say sometimes when you look at peace and justice and strong institution, you put them together, you can be good at peace, but justice and strong institution are the institution that are responding. And here there is also an indication of corruption IDEX. Those are some indicators that were used.
Yeah.
There is also export of major conventional weapons. Do you know that that case of
police guns that ended up in South Africa?
It's the one thing.
It's full on
your guns. You know, if something is reported by Interpol.
Yeah.
It become international data. You cannot delete it anymore.
Yeah.
You cannot delete it.
Namibia can't try and block it
you cannot delete it.
Or polish over it and issue a statement.
No, you can hide it here, ne?
Yeah.
We can do whatever we can do. We can, I'm also not happy with it, but there's nothing that you can do.
Yeah.
That is becoming international records. It's like the case of Ramaphosa. we can say, no, there's people
of Palapala.
Yeah, people are corrupt in what. But every time we listen to these guys, they are mentioning our names. Yeah. they are always mentioning our names.
Yeah.
Those are things that you cannot delete out. But I think, overall, then you have partnership goals to say, partnership goal, we have achieved it at a certain level. Challenges, we are given yellow, limited progress. Strengthened the means of implementation of a global partnership for sustainable development goals. Because I think, as we have indicated, partnership is not an MOU.
Mm.
Partnership is practical implementation of what you have agreed upon. Because if we speak about partnership, SDG is part of that.
Yeah.
To say at the international level, we subscribe to this, but are we doing it at home? Because that is also what has to be part of accessing.
Yeah.
Statistical performance index of country report on US-based multilateralism. And we also have our own reservation when it comes to international. You know, we can't agree with everything because we also have our own identity. You agree with me maybe at some point.
Yeah.
To say not everything that is at an international platform, we're happy with it. The way they deal with their identity is not the way we deal with our identity.
Mm.
But we are meeting at a certain level of respect. When they want to destroy our societal organizational structure, we also back down and say, no, wait a little bit. Yeah, that's why I think overall, colleagues, we are progressing. The question is the speed.
We are progressing.
No, we are progressing.
It might be slow.
Yeah. No.
I think, and this is probably what, because when you look at that indicator that day, mm-hmm. by the SDGs,
mm-hmm.
I think that is what informed is NDP6. Because you can see everything. You can see the same color scheme, the same particular messaging.
You are right. Then my problem is only here to say, are we directed by SDGs or we have our own strategy? Is it bottom up or is up bottom? Yeah. How are other countries doing it?
Yeah.
How are other countries
doing it? Or is it based upon you take your own unique case study?
Because our problems are not
universal.
They are not universal.
Yeah.
And they are also not exclusively defined by just SDG.
Yeah.
Because if somebody wants to speak about mineral beneficiation, where do we go?
Mm. Who have we seen?
If you want to speak about value addition, if the world has to be fair to us to say, hey, yes, I put this in my policy making, in my drafting of policy to say UN, Agenda 2063, then NDP6. But at an international level, what are you saying about those who are exploiting my resources?
Mm.
Because if that is not defined, then you have to say, okay, here we are doing it, but there are also things that we want to sort out here at home. Because otherwise, we will become an internationalist who is not happy at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
Or you will continuously compare Namibia.
Yeah.
You will be living in Namibia at this level.
You compare Namibia with Singapore.
actually, let's bring in Singapore, David. For now, let's deviate. Let's have a good deviation.
Mm.
So I found this guy. I want to show you his video first. Mm. This is Australian. He's a teacher.
Yeah.
His name, his particular social media platform is known as Punters Politics, just emphasizing the double P.
Yeah.
It's on mute or it's silent, but you can read some of the subtitles.
Yeah.
That speaks about government housing.
Mm.
Now, the joke he's making, which is basically a little bit of satire, the joke he's making is imagine Singapore and Australia talking to each other.
Mm.
And Australia asks Singapore, hey, because currently right now in Australia, some of the political or social circles of the ordinary Australian community is asking, why is the Australian government no longer participating in government housing?
Yeah.
And now you imagine to yourself, the listeners out there, imagine to yourself, Australia is looking for another country that has social housing or government housing.
Yeah.
And Australia, because they're in the same vicinity as Singapore, they bump into Singapore and they go like two people talking on the street.
Yeah.
And they talk to each other and the discussion is based upon Australia asking Singapore, hey, Singapore, do you have social housing? Singapore says, yes. And then Australia asks him, how could you do that? Well, we build houses No, firstly, the question was, hey, Singapore, did you alleviate, housing needs or affordable housing needs in your country? The answer was yes. And then Australia asked Singapore, how did you do this? Well, we've got a housing rate of 80%. Literally, you can look that up. Singapore is a housing, a government housing rate of 80%, but it's a different rate. Yeah. It's where you measure how many people in your country are living in a house with a roof over their head. Not this funny thing known as a corrugated iron shelter here in the informal settlements.
Yeah.
Literally a house.
Yeah.
Or a flat.
Mm.
Do you know what the Singaporean government does, David?
Mm.
They literally, you know that wonderful idea that former President Pohamba had with mass housing?
Yeah.
But here is where NHE literally builds the houses. And NHE sells it to every Namibian. Not NHE selling, NHE first selling it to government employees, the police, then the army. No. NHE builds and then sells.
Yeah.
Builds, but they sell only if you don't have a house. So let's say you are 19 or 18.
Yeah.
I'll use the Russian example.
Yeah.
1918, you get into the economy, you get your first job. Now you have to look for a place to stay. And then you can go and access a government database of property. Now here's the thing. That is what Lim Kuan Yew, what's the guy's name? The first prime minister or the first president of Singapore, that guy.
Yeah.
Lim Kuan Yew. That's what he wanted to achieve. Australia did do the same thing back in the 70s and 60s.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, David. The generation that Australia did it for is now the generation that's the richest generation on planet Earth. It's the same people in Namibia.
Yeah.
Yes, Uncle Bwana, it's you. I'm talking about you.
but you know, the developmental trajectory of Namibia.
Yeah.
Should be guided by first what we need at home.
Of course.
Because if we don't define that, I don't have a problem with us respecting international
treaties,
international direction, where everything is going. But if we ask ourselves a question, just one question, what do we want?
Yeah.
That can solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
What do we want? Who are we? And what can we do?
Yeah.
Because the scholars of development studies will tell you to say we are unique case studies.
Mm.
And it's only a country that, like Namibia.
Mm.
Every country is unique on its nature.
Mm.
What put Singapore where it is, if you try it will make you fall and you will not recover.
Yeah.
Because Singapore, where it was 30 years ago, did not have
resources. They still don't have resources.
Yeah, but they did not have a problem of energy like we have.
Yeah.
They did not have a problem of quality education like we have.
Yeah.
They have their own problem. They have their own corruption.
Yeah.
They are different in terms of geographical
corruption is punished. Corruption and in possession of drugs.
Yeah.
They're like this together.
Mm. They're cousins.
Not cousins. They're literally siblings.
Oh, yeah.
Because you get hefty fines for both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the question is that
hefty punishments.
Who is driving our developmental
agenda.
You know,
the manifestos 2 years back.
There is an issue of over-planning in Namibia. We plan, we literally plan, discuss, and plan.
Yeah.
And that is going to kill us.
Yeah.
And if somebody understood that from a very long distance, you don't need to plan what if you already have a plan. You just need to find out to say, why is other plan is not working?
Mm.
I can go to an SOE today. Then they say we are stuck here. I say no. Bring me the 15 years ago strategic plan.
Mm.
Then I look at where the problem is.
Mm.
Because when you look at where the problem is, then you find a way to do it. Because planning never solves any problem.
Mm.
That is paralysis by analysis.
Mm.
That is exactly what we are engaging into.
Mm.
When somebody inviting me to the next oil and gas conference, do I say no? No, I will not say no. Mm. I have to go and attend.
Mm. Then you have to go and observe.
And observe.
Yeah.
Then the only question I'll ask. What is the differentiating factor between this one and the previous one?
Yeah.
When I read, I think that the midterm budget review will come after next month.
That is true, yes. But but you know, but you know what comes next month? Next month is the, you have to be at that engagement, the civil society's engagement with Minister of Finance. Mm. I've realized that this has become an annual sort of like a fixture in the calendar, whereby civil society, they asked a former finance minister at that stage was, what's his name? Minister Shimi. They asked Minister Shimi if, you know, there can be a consultative process before October. No, it's not yet open. If there can be a consultative process before October, the mid-year, the midterm.
That's fine, just, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so they asked the question if they could have, like, insights before October. Mm. And then every September now this engagement has taken place since, I think, 2023? Because I was at last year's one, but I wasn't at 2024's one. I only saw it later on. Like on social media.
Yeah.
David, you get some of the best gold in terms of civil society contributions because civil society is on the ground in the communities.
Yeah. No, contribution with civil society, that one must really be respected. That says a lot about, it says a lot about institutional coordination. What I want to end into, especially whether we speak about SDG or speak about other development thing.
Yeah.
This thing of paralysis by analysis, where we, but you know what I mean, right?
I know.
Yeah, we spend more time on analyzing issues rather than acting.
Yeah.
Somebody said, just do the right thing.
How?
Just do the right thing. Don't be liked. Just do the right thing.
But but here's the thing, David. Yeah.
I'm not saying destroy. Just be pragmatic because pragmatism means actions. It also means things are going to fall in some places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you will not develop with the same pace, with the same voice, with the same approach that we had in the past 36 years. It's not being revolutionary and destroy things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're
It's just to say, when we are attending this consultation engagement, when we are going to the public-private sector forum, come and report.
Yeah.
And I see that the president is pressing all these institutions to say, those who make promises, the mining made promises, come and report. Because I need data to report to the Namibian people.
But how is the... But David, here's the thing. Do you know that mining is going to be and manufacturing.
Mm.
They're going to be the first sectors, for example.
Mm.
That will adopt automation and AI quicker than, for example, agriculture and fishing. So if we want that 10,000 jobs, you know, the extra 10,000 above the current 8,000 in mining.
Yeah.
Because the goal is 18,000, according to NDP6.
Mm-hmm.
If we want the extra 10,000 now,
mm-hmm.
to the economic planner out there, yeah, sure, they're selling the mineral at US dollar prices.
Mm.
The Namibian is being paid at Namibian dollar prices.
Yeah.
But we want to see real, sustainable, sustained living in this country.
Mm.
How are we gonna answer the question specifically of telling a company, listen, expand your wage bill, just for the sake of expanding it.
Yeah.
And then you hear after five years the mine closes down and it's in maintenance, and then everybody gets retrained. And it has happened before. Remember what happened to Rossing before the Chinese company bought it. And Lange Heinrich.
Even the Lange Heinrich.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, I hear what you are saying, especially looking at automation and all these things. The thing that everybody wants, what Africa wants to get into, is ownership of critical of the processes, sector.
Yeah.
And you are not in a developed and advanced country, you are not owning critical sector by taking them.
Yeah.
You're owning critical sector by developing capacity and owning critical sectors by stopping pit to pot strategy.
Yeah.
That is where we want to get into. Because that thing is a magic.
Mm.
Even in terms of numbers.
Mm.
Look at countries that did it. It's a magic.
Mm.
Look at numbers. Why are our friends not assisting us after we have been together for 60 years trading with each other? Why are they not assisting us to build not only capacity, but to build infrastructure?
Mm.
If they did it with United Arab Emirates from a desert, just a desert to where they are now, from just be people on top of camels and wearing what they are still wearing now, but now it's a bit white and fancy, to where they are now. Because the thing is, change the strategy, especially in terms of operation, not in terms of planning. In terms of planning, we are good.
Yeah.
We know what we want.
Yeah.
And then I still cannot wait for NIDA to present the 30,000 jobs. I'm still going to ask them whether they are integrated or not integrated. I'll still ask them to say, where is the 30,000 jobs?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we can't just stand up and promise people things that, you know.
No, they've gotten abandoned. Let me not call it abandoned. Yeah. They've got, it's abandoned. Mm. They've got an abandoned garment factory there in Nkurunkuru.
Yeah.
They can completely change the economic profile and image of Nkurunkuru. Do you know why?
Mm.
A factory, David,
yeah,
creates more disruption than a, let's say, a mining pit.
Yeah.
Nah? Mm. Why do I say that? With a factory, you can generate warehousing, storage, transportation facilities in close proximity to the factory.
Mm.
All you need to do is just supply, make sure you've got supply contracts, meaning supply in and supply out. Then you will see the economy flourishing of Nkurunkuru right there on the border. But you know what's the current situation of Nkurunkuru?
Mm.
10,000 inhabitants. Mm. Out of 100, out of the region of Kavango West, has 122,000 inhabitants. 10,000 of those inhabitants live in Nkurunkuru. Mm. Nkurunkuru is the only urban settlement of Kavango West. And the other 112,000 people live there somewhere in the bush.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those 10,000 people have a burden of building up that massive region. With that massive population somewhere out there in the bush, David. And you know what's on the cards for that region?
Mm.
They have to convert 3 more or 4 more small villages into recognized urban settlements.
You know, we are at the same page, especially to look at what is a game changer.
Yeah.
Manufacturing is one of them. You indicated that. But if you have to be practical,
they can get the 30,000. Don't worry,
they can get it.
NIDA can get it from that one factory. They can get it from that one factory. look, that factory ne, will work overtime. I know.
Look, you know what? Just sorry, ne?
Yeah.
If you create 30,000 jobs,
yeah,
in 2 years,
yeah,
in Windhoek. I'm just giving an example.
I don't want Windhoek to see those jobs.
I just want to give you an example.
Yeah.
In Windhoek.
Yeah.
Dwight, we are going to see changes.
I know.
Dwight, we are going to see even children that are going to school are going to be very happy.
Yeah.
The economy of a taxi driver itself, because it's going to change the whole system with just 30,000 within Windhoek.
Mm.
You are going to see, the whole thing will change because that 30,000 is a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And if you create 30,000 in 2 years, let me say just in the city of Windhoek, then that will also give you a guarantee.
Mm.
Because it will change the whole sector. It will also change the way academia is operating.
Yeah.
You also have a new people who are going to rise. Because why are we not rising? Because why are we not rising in Namibia in terms of either it's finance or ownership of properties? Is that we are at the bottom and we are fighting. We are on a survivor mode.
Mm.
We are at the bottom and we are fighting. And those of you who understand the blue sky strategy is that we are not even doing blue sky strategy of cooperation because we are fighting just to survive and eat at the bottom.
But that's the government's role. The government should have taken away that mentality of us.
No, the government is a referee. If the referee does not if the referee does not have proper equipment, we are not going to stop fighting. you know what? Ne?
Yeah.
You have the informal sector fighting with powerful institutions.
Yes.
And
you have the taxis fighting with each other.
Yeah.
And their own clients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you also have an individual fights. That's why we are not moving is that because economy was never built by the first class.
Yeah.
The economy is built by the powerful middle class.
Yeah.
You need more people that are moving to middle class every year.
Yeah.
And and
it needs to be a migrationary period, but you also need the middle class expanding more.
Yeah.
And more.
Because if you just have a middle class expanding,
yeah,
at the top it will automatically.
Yeah.
Because if you have a lot of people coming to the middle class, because in Namibia when you speak about middle class, you can speak it in different way. You can look at it in terms of profession. You can look at it in terms of income. You can also look at it in terms of sustainability.
Mm.
But due to the structure of now, the inequality rates,
yeah,
you can be in the first class, but you are behaving like a middle class because you are the only one in hundreds.
Yeah.
And if you are not distributing your resources correctly, somebody is going to steal it from you.
Yeah.
That's why it's quite more dangerous to be too rich within an unequal society. That's why you see when you are in town, you have division of towns.
Mm.
But coming back to the point of creating 30,000 jobs just in Windhoek, because I don't want 100,000 jobs. I don't want 500,000 jobs. 30,000 will change the whole equation.
It will.
Yeah, because if you create that, it will just change the whole equation, the way people think, the way people trade. Even manufacturing will start.
Yeah.
Even making of own products will start.
Yeah.
Because if NIDA can give us that, then we can say, thank you very much, let's move to the next. Then that's our achievement.
But you know who's moving faster than NIDA?
Mm.
And I am so sad not to attend that thing last week.
Who was
the week before?
Who is that?
Pepkor. They had an open day public engagement with, if you're doesn't matter, a supplier of whatever.
I think a home run discussion is getting a lot of credit.
They had like an open call, even the Namibia Competition Commission, shared the particular thing of that company had. Because it's all about local content, building up the local content.
No, then they are going to get a lot of support.
They're going to get it. They're going to generate the 30,000. And then they're going to control it in their value addition. But here's the thing, Ned.
Yeah.
Then where does NIDA come in? Because now NIDA sits with a facility in Nkurunguru and a facility in Keetmans. Ne? We don't know the status in terms of where the... It's the same garment factories.
Before NIDA, there was an agency...
OCD.
Within the Ministry of Agriculture... That was in charge of controlling the green scheme. Is it Bitvet? What that is it?
Yeah.
Agribev.
Agribusdev.
Is it integrated, right?
No. Yeah, the people were reabsorbed back into the ministry.
No, I read what Pepco is doing.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what they want. That if they have done that.
And you know who owns Pepco?
We are going to be rich together.
And you know who owns Pepco?
Yeah.
Remember the billionaire I forgot?
Mm.
But Christo Visa.
Yeah.
He's one of the South African billionaires.
Yeah, but this guy, they combine, right?
No.
Pepco combined with what? Because beforehand, they combined with another shops.
Pepco bought Incredible and Hi-Fi.
Yeah.
Then they bought... Who's the other company they bought? They recently bought someone new, another company. But you can see the corporate strategy has completely changed.
Yeah, but I think it's a revolutionary thinking because
and it's a family business from Kimberley, né? Started by a man and his wife.
You know what that is going to do?
Yeah,
it's going to give more money to South Africa, but also going to give more money to Namibia.
Yes,
that is a profitable and effective business to say you are going to win one way or the other.
Yeah,
because if you have suppliers which are from here, it will bring us back to the conversation that we're having the other day of why are we celebrating opening of a mall in Korea Hub Dam if all the supply is coming from South Africa. Why is celebrating that? No, there's no celebration there. Yes, thank you, but no. Because, okay, is that, you can't say the mall created 300 jobs.
Yeah.
But how much money are you losing?
Yeah.
But
it would be a balance of temporary and permanent jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, because that one I say, no, creating a mall is a different thing than creating something that can also opening up for local businesses to get into. Because if you create a mall and you have our good client ShopRite, then I can also give my Marathon Chicken there.
Yeah.
At an understandable business, not just to give because we are from the community.
Yeah.
Maybe you can check my quality check, you can train me, that is good.
Yeah.
But if we just said a bit to say, no, all the government officials, they go to Kware Hub, there's an opening of a mall.
Mm.
That is development 30 years ago. It's not development now anymore.
But it still is an indicator of delivery. You know that. That's why I'm more impressed, my personal opinion.
With a mall.
If I see a mall or a business opening up more, or bringing something that has commercial activity to it, then let's, for example, say Ministry of Health taking forever to open up a clinic in a new settlement. Let's, for example, say.
Yeah.
And the clinic needs to be empowered because you need feet. You need nurses and doctors to help with that community's needs. Mm. Not to tell a Namibian, please drive or fly from an extreme part of the country.
Yeah.
Just to Windhoek. Now everything.
Yeah, no, that is it.
Yeah.
But if you bring a mall in the most unequal location or unequal society.
Yeah.
You are bringing two things. Number one, you may bring service closer to the people.
Mm.
But you are also going to deepen two things.
The unequal.
Dependency.
Yeah.
And an inequality.
Yeah.
Then smaller business, there are only two things. Smaller businesses, they automatically die a natural death. They just freeze.
Because they obviously see a consolidation.
Yeah.
There's a concentration, a consolidation here.
Yeah.
How do we compete?
Smaller business will just freeze.
Yeah.
And then now you're going to have a problem. Human beings, they will try to survive.
Mm.
Then you are going to have, chaos. But bringing it closer with a very good strategy that say, no, I'm not here to compete with you.
Mm.
I'm here to provide you with what you do not have.
Or trying to help you with an additional service provision.
Yeah, an additional. But if I come here and I bring you the basics,
you will not
see it, but the pain of somebody who sell carrying things on top of her heads just to survive, seeing that coming closer. At the beginning, she will be celebrating, no, I'm getting closer.
Because there will be more clients coming here past.
There will be more clients coming here. But you also start understanding to say, in the long run, then it will be a cutthroat competition already here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's something that we need to look at to say, what do we need to deal with? Even with this discussion of SDG to say, what can we deal with first?
Mm.
Do we need to start with climate? Do we need to start with life underwater? Do we need to start with ending of poverty? And can I end poverty by giving people money and food or by giving people skills? Can I end poverty by creating a lot of jobs in the mine or by adding value to the minerals?
Mm.
And those are the discussions that we must have. And I think the more we are deepening into this discussion, the more I start realizing that it's quite even very difficult for a developmental planner at a national level, especially to execute that strategy, because what you plan for commerce is not going to work in Mahake.
No.
And
it even becomes a little bit nuanced, because commerce, you know, City of Windhoek is already doing most of your work.
Yeah. But what you plan for Chikoto will not work for Erongo.
Yeah.
That's why it require a coordinated approach in doing what you need to do, especially in terms of development. But SDGs in general, we bite all kinds of apples. The one for gender equality, we finished it.
Yeah. But we are actually on a new one. We are busy finishing the whole bowl of apples for gender equality.
No, gender equality, we did it. But maybe good things are still coming. Maybe good things are still coming.
Because
positivity matters to me, but with a clear strategy, not just on hope. No.
I mean, David, the nice thing is that Namibia, we can fly our own banner to meet our own goals.
Yeah.
What I would just like, and I'm still singing this song 2 years later, since 2024, we really need to see an integration of how data informs some of our decision-making or the policy-making. Mm. When we talk about a data set, for example, or data, for that matter, David, we have to know, for example, in that crime thing, we have to know the impact specifically of crime on that come through. Let's, for example, say where that new mall is in Koreanghap.
Yeah.
What is the prevalence of certain crimes? And does it speak to specifically the inequality discussion that you also highlighted a little bit earlier?
Yeah.
Does it speak to the community around that mall? They are thankful specifically, let's say, that the private sector decided to invest in a property, bring other private sector participants closer to that community. And then the community says, thank you, thank you, thank you. Maybe we can get jobs. And then they realize the jobs are coming from Komastal. And Komastal is a middle class place. You know that.
No, it's you are right. It boiled down to data.
Yeah. And if... Now the community sees, okay, but everybody working in that mall in Koreanghap are coming from Komastal. They finished grade 12. My son did not finish grade 12. He didn't even reach grade 10. They are learning deficiencies in the community, meaning Some people reached grade 12, some people didn't. Some people had the opportunity to finish school, some people didn't. Some people are semi-skilled, some people are not. And then they just need that one lucky break to just say, okay, someone in my family can now successfully, reliably receive a salary every month after, you know, being successful, a successful candidate. And then the question pops up in terms of how many of those people do you actually see?
No, it's a good question because impact always matters.
Yeah.
There's one guy, in from Zambia who present this public, he's an academic doctor and he's always speaking about developmental conversation. One of the things that he indicated is that impact and what you've said data they are very important, especially when you are measuring. We don't want education system celebrating producing 30 or 100 chemical engineer in the society, but that education system do not go back and look at what are these engineers are doing. Because if you go back and look at what are these engineers are doing, if are they just busy drinking or they are productive in the society?
Or did they have to immigrate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same thing to say when you open, there are good facilities happening. There are a lot of things happening in Ohangwena. When you open a clinic in Ohangwena, for example,
yeah,
how many people have access to that clinic? What are the statistics saying?
Yeah.
And what is the regional statistics saying about quality of health?
Okay.
Because one thing that you need to know is that in if you want a real development, creation of a hospital within a region does mean that you want a lot of people that are being assisted by that hospital. You want better quality medical care. Because if that hospital existed for 5 years, it means that if it's quality health, the children that are being born in that hospital are being born by people that got a quality public health education, people that know what to do, people that know that you can't give tombo to a child before a certain, not just to a child, and make sure that at least they reach a certain level of maturity. But if you just bring a hospital within a community, then the statistic continue to increase every year in the next 10 years. It means that you did not really solve a problem. You just brought an infrastructure that can assist people temporarily, but it's not a facility that can bettering the situation of the people.
Yeah.
Because what we see in countries that are developing is that they celebrate things that should not be celebrated. You cannot say we are doing very well because you know, we have a lot of people accessing Central Hospital, accessing Katutura Hospital, and that is not development.
Do you know what that, do you know what that actually sounds to me? That sounds like what do you call it? I almost said oversupply.
Dependency or
not dependency. Yeah. It looks like a positive on the face.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah.
But it looks, it's
actually a problem.
It's actually a problem because you have to ask the question, why are you coming to Central or to Karatura?
Yeah.
Is there not a clinic in your community? Let's say it's Ochumise.
Yeah.
You know, why would the person have to travel all the way from Ochumise to, let's say, Karatura?
Yeah.
But obviously it depends on the ailment or the emergency.
Yeah.
But let's say it's something as basic as helping with an emergency response to a baby's needs.
Right? Yeah.
You know, pediatrics.
Yeah.
And then they get to the clinic in Ochumise and there is a massive line because the doctor forgot to show up and it's just the nurses on the response and the nurses now are standing in. Now that person goes like, you know what, let me go to Karatura. And then they go to Karatura and they find an even longer line. Now the question is, why would the person say, yeah, it's lovely that people are coming to Karatura. So you are happy to have work? Or you are happy to say,
Are you solving a problem? Because is it not me and you we're having that discussion to say, until we come to the point of realizing that the role of a police is not arresting people, is to make sure that the society is better, crime is prevented. The role of a doctor is not for you to get hours that a cardiologist operated the heart of 20,000 people, is to make sure that you prevent.
And we're still sending Namibians to South Africa, you know that?
Yeah.
For cardiology.
Yeah. Yeah. And is to make sure that you prevent that to happen to that society.
Mm.
Because if we don't understand this into details, it will become problematic where we are celebrating the number of patients that we treated.
Mm.
We are giving people ranks just because they arrested our young ones who are supposed to be the future leaders. But we did not address the problem.
But if you know that the young one was a problem at home, yeah, and then the problem manifested outside.
We are supposed to start already to say, maybe your community policing is not strong. Yeah, you started there. Maybe your the way you give information is not so strong that, how come you have a society where people are getting ranks by technically putting others down?
Yeah.
Although it's their work.
Yeah.
How come you have a society where a doctor is being praised because he had 20,000 heart operation?
Mm.
Then you get all these ranks. But can you go back and ask to say, what is the intention of public health?
Mm.
The intention of public health is to make sure the society is better.
Mm.
We reduce this kind of chronic diseases to make sure that people understand that David, is wrong for you to drink 20 Castor Light, and then you go and exercise. It's true. You must bring that thing.
Yeah.
And to realize that you, chief, your job is not to hide behind a certain part of the road so that you can catch people because they are speeding.
Mm.
Your job is to make sure that a driver's psychological mindset is changed, because we are not doing each other a favor.
Mm.
Even for him to understand that you doing that, you are protecting him.
Mm.
You know that you still have police officers that they do not understand that writing you a ticket, a fine ticket for speeding, is actually the protection of that citizen that is speeding.
Mm.
They think they are punishing you. They are protecting you. They are correcting the behavior.
Mm.
At the same time, they are protecting you.
Mm.
But maybe until our education system starts going that, then we realize that, no, today I wrote to 70 people, I showed them a lesson.
Mm.
Then you are wrong.
There's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
I don't know if we are friends anymore, but he works for City Police.
Yeah.
He was applauded in the Afrikaans Daily Newspaper for writing, I think, a record for speeding tickets.
Yeah.
This was 2022, 2023 there.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it because I was like, okay, maybe it was because it was end of the year, close to December.
Mm.
And it was just a funny thing to see, specifically because I saw him on the front page and I was like, why is he being applauded for writing tickets?
Mm.
Because do you know where he stands sometimes?
Mm.
Okay, I should probably not mention this.
Mm.
But he's part of that traffic exercise here at the cemetery.
Yeah, yeah.
Close to Gamams, the Transnumber offices.
Mm.
It was literally where most of the motorists were being penalized.
You know, that is work. But that is also showing that you don't have a society in order.
Mm.
Because sometimes when you attach promotion and monetary praising to things that are a result of a society not in order, then you have a problem.
Mm.
The Minister of Health must celebrate when the records of people admitted in hospitals are going down.
Mm.
That is the quality of the health system.
Mm.
The police system must also celebrate when they are not arresting a lot of people.
They must be like Norway.
Yeah. Because
or Sweden.
Yeah.
You actually live in a hotel. Mm. It's not a hotel. It's a prison.
Yeah.
But do you know that your doors are not locked? Your cell doors.
Yeah. No, it's a correction of a behavior. But I think it takes a very long time, because if you build 20,000 prison, You are not solving any problem.
No, you're not.
Yeah, you are not. And I think that is also where we have to start with our discussion to say, what do we really want? And when other countries are looking at us, what do they think?
Or what do we show them?
What do we show them? And what is the role of everybody? What is the role of me as a journalist? What is the role of me as a teacher? How are we coordinating with each other?
Mm.
And moving forward, just to know exactly what, when you speak about sustainable development, what do we mean?
Mm.
Because not a temporary development, it's a development that you can sustain.
Yeah.
Is building a clinic part of sustainable development is an agent of sustainable development, because we want to get somewhere.
Yeah.
If you speak about sustainable development, we can touch all we want to touch in, but the question is that, are we defining what we want as a country?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's just before the ad break, which is about 4 or 5 minutes away.
Yeah.
Another particular thing that also sometimes pops up,
yeah,
David, has been, for example, there was an interesting thing that I caught on 2 years back also. Investment into the human capital.
No, it's good now. Sorry.
Oh, it's good. Mm-hmm. Into human capital, yeah, sectors. So yeah, human capital is now education and health together.
Definitely.
And every time when you go look at that World Happiness Report, then it's always the 4 Scandinavian countries there. And then every year, Helmut and I here on the Home Run, or even you, because yeah, you did it was earlier this year.
Yeah, yeah.
We show up here and we cite, okay, what are the reasons why these 5 countries are always there? It's always Norway, it's always Finland, it's always Denmark, it's always Sweden, it's always Iceland. Do you know what, David? Out of the whole collection of things, the conclusion that you can reach is that the government took away burdens from the everyday person.
Yeah.
So what are some of those burdens? I mentioned Singapore's government housing.
Yeah.
You take away that burden. Then you take away transport. Why must I pay? Because we also have to ask, David, in terms of innovating certain aspects of our economy and of our everyday life. Why have we not innovated on taxis? But when there's innovation, for example, like with the ride hailing,
yeah,
like that day that I had the Yango people here that yeah, paid for that yeah, interview.
Yeah.
They were trying to bring a solution
yeah,
to a stagnant public sector,
yeah,
a public transport sector. And it was stagnant. Why? Because an artificial need was created. No more issuance of taxi licenses had taken place way before this, before 2026.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an artificial need
yeah,
because the shortage is created by someone just saying in a statement, we won't issue licenses anymore
yeah,
because there's 50,000 of you Vindhukas sitting with these licenses. But it's a piece of paper. The Vindhukas aren't being told you. The Vindhukas aren't being told, listen, that thing can expire and then I can give you a license away. No, that's not what the ministry would do.
Yeah.
The ministry just says, I issue, it's for life. Dwight owns this license.
I hear you.
Now here's the other concern. Innovation tried taking place. Then the ministry wants to regulate, wants to punish, which is literally your explanation.
Yeah.
They want to regulate, they want to punish. No one is seeing the innovation, the alleviation of a burden. Now comes the next thing, for example. Okay, I mentioned housing, I mentioned public transport. Now you get into the other aspect of public transport, City of Windhoek's role. A bus, David, public transport, public bus service in the world doesn't walk up and down, doesn't drive up and down a street. It drives in a circular route. It serves multiple stops. Even if you get public-private partnership involved, meaning there's a public bus, the private company runs the bus service, and it's a contract that runs to the local authority, but you allow competition, meaning there's multiple bus services that run this particular discussion. Nowhere, David, nowhere, nowhere have I seen a straight line up and down. Only in Namibia, I see a straight line up and down.
Transportation with Namibian characteristics.
Do you know what's the funny thing when you said that? Because it actually is. It's transportation with Namibian characteristics.
Namibian characteristic. Yeah.
Another thing. So, yeah. Sorry, David.
No.
Another thing that will happen in the short-term future, and I'm talking about short-term, which is already actually here. This thing is already here. Namibia is now so fixated on building these massive roads with multiple lanes. So this particular negative trait will start showing up. We will have more cars. We will have more traffic congestion, which will contribute to our climate change things, meaning because we're giving off more fumes. And we will still not have alleviated public transport.
Yeah, correct. You are absolutely correct. I think it requires multiple. What is a better way of putting it? Way it's not a one man mind. It requires the stakeholders to be, you know, to come together. And it's boiled down again to institutional coordination. To say, when you speak about transportation within the city of Windhoek, who are you speaking about?
Yeah.
Are these guys able to sit together and talk to each other?
Yeah.
And when you speak about that aspect of either it's planning or where you want to get into.
Yeah.
Because there are always dynamics. And people must also understand that in the next 10 years, those who are in charge of planning transportation are not only going to be there, are not going to be there anymore. There will be another person. But do we have a clear framework to say, when you are planning transport infrastructure, who did you consult?
Mm.
Because people think, you know, a pedestrian view.
Mm.
When somebody is a pedestrian, it doesn't mean that he does not own any transportation. Everybody can be a pedestrian.
Mm.
That's why if you have an engineer who is a city planner, then you have a traffic officer,
mm.
you have a ministry professional within the Ministry of Works and Transport, then you have businesses,
mm.
you also have a representative from either schools or the community,
mm.
and you have a pedestrian view in that planning. You have somebody, you have a commuter from Kaanja to or Rehoboth to Windhoek, and you also have those who can afford only buses.
Mm.
Then you can solve problems. I'm always talking to, I'm always discussing with people, especially, you know, what the city bus is the most experiencing thing. You know that time when you go to universities.
Yeah.
We used to go with,
but it's actually not supposed to be the most expensive.
No.
Do you know that?
No, it's not expensive. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
We used to go with, Okalefa, these mini buses.
Yeah. No, but
the
still.
Transport. Yeah. They really saved us. Even the bigger one during nighttime and all these things, they can come and save you.
Yeah.
But the question is that.
Just hold on, David. We're really getting into that ad break.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was...
My man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give it more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
And we're going to take one more ad, dear listeners, from that collection of ads. This is Vavitch University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur, Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy, Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences, Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work Honours. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing, Level 8. Master of Public Health and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. David, you still had your idea about city buses.
Yeah, I'm saying it's the most interesting form of transportation because it's integrating everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on where you are in the society. But the other thing that we also need to look at is that I don't think there's a better way of planning. That's why we are always fighting each other. There's a better way of planning, particularly in the infrastructure where you want to save almost everybody.
Mm.
And that can also be indicated by these things of speed bumps and many other things.
Mm.
To say when it comes to planning of infrastructure, there's no one formula, but there's a standard formula like what you have indicated to say.
Mm.
Other countries are doing this. But the question is also that when you are not moving in the circle, whose design?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also something that we need to look at. But where we want to get into, where it's boiled down again to the conversation of SDG. Mm. It's a question of his, apart from conversation, apart from us having this conversation, which a lot of people had it, expert had this conversation before. They are still having it now to say, where are we in SDG? The main question that we should ask ourselves is that, where are we moving from here?
Yeah.
Because where are we, what do we need to do different?
Yeah.
And apart from what's happening around, what do we need to do different? Either is infrastructure development, either is all other SDG. Because if we just discuss for the sake of discussing, then you don't ask those questions to say, not who is, my question of who is sabotaging national development, who is sabotaging national development intentionally and unintentionally?
Mm.
There are those who think they are doing well, but they are bringing more problems than solutions.
Mm.
What can we do about it? Those are some of the things that we should continue asking ourselves.
I mean, in many cases, what I've always been impressed with, David, because I came to a realization at the start of this year, what the first formats of, and that's why I appreciate civil society a lot. I realized they are the invisible voice, not that they are invisible, but they are actually the mobilizer on the ground now that many communities in this country rely on. The aspect of recognizing who this economy, this country has to work for is a critical thing that seems to somehow be lost in the greater scheming.
Of things.
Yeah. The reason why I say who this economy is working for is we have to ask the question, for example, that plea of for mining, add 10,000 extra jobs, né?
Yeah.
That plea, David, it was directed to the mining companies, né?
Yeah.
But the mining companies now can also have leverage on the Namibian government to say, okay, if you want me to add on 10,000 extra jobs, I need extra so-and-so and so-and-so here and there, certain particular, you know, favorable treatments, so and stuff like that. Meaning a compromise can slip in. A downgrading of some sort of a particular compliance measure can occur. Or a removal of a particular barrier in that company's operation can be introduced. But if you go and tell, let's say that mall in Koreanghap, that mall knows immediately the builder of the mall knew, I cannot have a business without a community.
Yeah.
That's why a mall is always in a community. A mall is not outside of a community, outside of a town.
Yeah.
It's always close to residential areas. It's not close to a CBD. It's close to residential areas.
Yeah.
But a mine doesn't care. A mine is away from residential areas.
Yeah.
Okay, except if you're in Tsumeb, you know, the mine was in the middle of the town. But yeah. A mine doesn't care where they are.
Yeah.
Now, here's the discussion, David.
Yeah.
Namibia has been fixated for 36 years on certain parts of our economy which are not part of a community. So you don't see the community. Remember we spoke about the farming communities.
Yeah, yeah.
And Anga Bwana also referenced those farm workers and small farming villages and stuff like that.
Indeed.
The thing is, you don't see those people if you're in Windhoek because you don't get to think about them. They're not in your face.
But I don't want to cut you, ne?
No, you can cut. Don't worry.
Just what development can do.
Yeah.
If you want to see what development can do when there is no inclusion, go to the outskirts of Windhoek. Go to Windhoek Rural. Because Windhoek Rural is not a fixed constituency. It's a constituency various part of Windhoek. You go to Mix. You go to Boomhatsbrum. You go to you go to Outer Beast. Whatever the name is. But you know what I mean.
Know. Do you know what the first time that when I heard that name, I was like, what?
I thought it was an insult.
I thought it was a farm.
Yeah.
I don't know why it was converted, but I realized it was those farmlands that Sylvan bought, and then it was incorporated into limits.
Then you visited this community, then you look at them in their eyes.
Yeah.
Look at their survival.
Yeah.
Then you ask yourself to say,
look at local industry.
Look at local industry. Then you ask yourself a question to say, there is casualty of development.
Yeah.
That should not be left just there.
Yeah.
Because when Windhoek started expanding, not everyone was able to live in Windhoek.
Yeah.
When the outskirts of Windhoek started expanding and building opportunities, there are always casualty of development.
Mm.
But what did other countries do? Especially to incorporate. That is the sense of when the sense of community come in.
Mm.
To say, if I have a bigger business, whether I'm coming with expert or not, is it really that I can come to a community and I don't include anybody?
Mm.
Is it really that I can come to a community and I don't train one or two?
Mm.
And,
or I don't have to hire from the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether they speak or they don't speak.
Yeah.
But that is, can already tell you to say there is casualty of development. That should also be looked at, especially when you speak about community. Then you can, we can continue with the conversation, especially when you speak about what bigger minds can do.
I mean, the other interesting thing that also exists, yeah. David, is, yeah. For example, what was the marine SDG, life under the sea?
Yeah.
Do you know that could be one of the quickest ways in terms of how you can stimulate a local economy at the coastal towns of Namibia?
Yeah.
Meaning you allow fishermen to fish.
Mm.
They catch, they come and sell.
Mm.
It's a very plain, very straightforward idea. It happens in South Africa, and it happens in any other country around Africa, and in Europe, and in Asia, and in South America, and in North America. It's in Namibia that we only allow preferential treatment to a big company. And here's the funny thing, you must have a trawler, you must have this. So you need to satisfy a compliance measure that speaks about bankrupting a small guy.
Compliance,
yeah,
in compliance bottlenecks,
yeah,
is what kept a lot of people in the informal sector, because compliance on its own has become more expensive than even the business itself.
I know.
Yeah, it become more expensive than the business itself, and
I mean, even if you ask the question of David, why can't you just you studied political science? Why can't you just walk into the bush and go start a mine company? You know, you, your brother, your sister, you guys just and you guys go and borrow the few things, and then you go and apply for a small EPL at the ministry.
Yeah.
You take that thing and you just go into the bush and you start chopping at things.
You know, I think maybe the understanding is still coming. You know, compliance on its own, it defeats a lot of business before they start.
Yeah.
Because it requires already you, especially when you speak about mining, to be at a certain class of the society. There are things that you cannot enter while you're at a certain class of the society. Not because you are not able to do, because the system itself is pushing you out already automatically.
Mm.
In terms of compliance, in terms of attending meetings. Yeah, it's true.
That is true.
Access to those critical information.
Exactly.
Because you are already excluded from the start.
Yeah.
That's why there is somebody say, born in Namibia, you must push very hard because life is already leading you 3-0.
Yeah.
Because if you are born then from a rural and a community that does not have good resources, then it's 4-0. Then you have to push yourself. By the time you equalize, by the time you equalize, it's almost extra time.
By the time you equalize, then you're already married.
Yeah.
You've already got kids.
Yeah.
Now you have to try and fend for the kids to get what you didn't have.
Then make a mistake of messing up.
Or you become an alcoholic. Or you become an alcoholic, which is a bigger own goal.
It's
a red card and an own goal.
It's a red card and own goal and the warning again. You are not going to recover from that.
No.
That's why, in other countries, can be 1-1, or it can be you are even two goals ahead.
Yeah.
But from the start already, it's already leading.
Yeah.
But the question is that what can we do without compromising the national interest, especially we want to get into? What can we do in terms of SDG, especially after all the discussion? What is the way forward? What can be recommended as moving forward? Do we need to go with all of them, or we need to tackle the one that can also assist others?
Do you know what will help us very quickly, David?
Mm.
Like in the next 4 years, what we can even achieve in the next 7 months.
Yeah.
If Namibia integrates its data collection, data management system for the public sector.
Yeah.
And they empower NSA to such a level that NSA can produce the necessary data.
Mm-hmm.
This picture,
mm.
This picture would eliminate the red, which is a small percentage. I mean, it's this is less than 10. I think this is less than 20%, the red part.
Yeah.
It can convert the yellow
into
a bigger green. And then Namibia is constantly winning in terms of the SDG race.
Yeah, because that would be a magic pill.
Just data. Just data interoperability, data management. And that means all the ministries connecting to each other and to the NSA.
Yeah.
And the, all the NSA does is just, it just brings out reports that everybody in the economy can collect. Oh, wow.
And there's no decision without evidence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I almost said something, but yeah, let me not add anything further. Yeah. So we are a minute and a half away. David, if you still want to add something before we say goodnight.
No, I'm not adding. I'm just saying, SDG is our baby. From a diplomacy point of view, the late Theo Ben-Gurion was the president of UN General Assembly in between 1999 and 2000 in the formation of Millennium Development Goals. That eventually turned into Sustainable Development Goals. And what we can do, and coincidentally, Namibia also championed
Forum for the Future and Pact of the Future?
Yeah, Pact for the Future to look at how do we can accelerate SDG. So if it's our baby at the diplomatic level, it means that we can do it at the national level.
Yes.
We just need to talk to each other. Because the problem is that we understand each other, but we are not talking.
Yeah.
Just institutions need to talk to each other and we can do these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's all we need, guys.
Yeah.
Just for the last 25 seconds, let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow. Afternoon, I'm sorry for the caller trying to come through. We'll have to leave it there, park the bus there for tonight.
Yeah,
and catch us tomorrow on the Heroes Day special of the Home Run. Okay, we won't be speaking about Heroes Day special, but yeah.